Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
We'll do it live! Howdy! Alrighty. Hey, it's a beautiful Friday evening where I am. I hope it's as beautiful wherever you are. Welcome to the 3 hours of live programming that the Horn offers on Fridays. I'm the only member of this cast crazy enough to stay at work on Friday. Because I love it. And we got plenty of places to go this evening. Lots of fun to be had. Some of the lunacy that's out there. Yes, there are pole dancing Mormons. Pole dancing Mormons. And they want to make it an Olympic sport. I kid you not. It's a little too visual to run. The audio is not as much as the video is. But you gotta trust me on this one. There are pole dancing Mormons out there who indeed have a petition circulating to make pole dancing an Olympic sport. No, really. They're proud to announce that they already have 300 signatures from around the world on their petition to make pole dancing an Olympic sport. For the sake of perspective, as it was noted in the blog post where I observed this, by comparison, Nuke the Moon has 288 signatures worldwide on its petition. Yeah, I know. Pole dancing Mormons. Yeah. Oh, there's all kinds of nuttiness out there. The Attorney General Michael Mukasey, borne down by the weight of the evil that he has done, the evil that he has acceded to, the evil that he has winked at, apparently got all slain in the spirit or something at a Federalist Society meeting last night and just started gibbering and shaking and collapsed to the floor. He's said to be feeling fine now. How can you tell? So there's that. Oh, it goes on and on. A headline. From the fine folks at the American Family Association and their multi-million-dollar news website. Self-esteem movement creates arrogant teens. Self-esteem creates arrogant teens. Why, you little, you can't do nothing right. Yeah, that's what America needs. But then again, that's what the Repiglican Party has given America for at least the last 8 years. Oh, we can't have a green, sustainable, renewable economy. We can't do nothing. We're too dumb. All we know how to do is blow up mountains and drill holes in the ground and dump oil on our seashores. That's because we're too dumb to do anything else. Yeah. I tell you, by the way, do you remember how I spent 6 months saying how much worse it's going to get, how much worse it's going to get, how much worse it's going to get as we approach the election? Shh. Memo to the same people. They ain't letting up. Out in Wichita, Kansas, at a place that is decidedly not the Westboro Baptist Church outside Topeka, Kansas, but is still in Kansas. I don't know. The Wally and Dookie over at MorningConstitution.com are going to have to square me up on this. What gives? But anyway, no, Wichita, Kansas, there's some sort of Christian fellowship spiritual center, and it bills itself as the church with no walls, when actually it's the church with no brains. And their pastor has a sign up on the little, you know, the little doohickeys that, you know, like you use for a grocery store, you know, the eggs, 99 cents a dozen, you know, that kind of thing. Only it says, America, you have elected a Muslim president. And this is an offense unto the eyes of the Lord. Levi's boot cut 32:21. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a video moment over from chickennoodlenews.com. Where Rick Sanchez, and by the way, he's getting a little traction, Rick Sanchez is, with liberal folk. I urge caution. I do. Because this is a guy who was on the air the other night, as our buddy Ed reported, and he argued that the problem with Detroit was that people were... Members of the United Auto Workers had no business retiring before 65 or 70 years old, that you're supposed to, you know, work till you drop and then get, you know, and then go for the dirt nap, and that's how it works. Yeah, I know. But today he took on the video, maybe it was yesterday, I don't know, it all runs together after a while. This is Friday, for the love of God. He took on this preacher from Wichita, Kansas, who's, you know, one of those, you know, types, the kind that you ask a question, well, you know, it says over in 33rd Flip-Floppians, that this is, this, you know, there's not a lot out of Fundy's that I haven't heard before, but this was a new one. Why do you suppose that we have three branches of government and not four and not two? Well, it comes from the book of Isaiah, where it says that there shall be a God who is king and a God who is the lawmaker and the God who is the judge of the world. That's why, see, we was founded as a Christian nation. I'm telling you, the morons, and I'm not just talking about the morons who have an M between the R and the O, the morons are scurrying all over the kitchen floor just like the lights just went on. And it falls to you and me to stomp them whenever and wherever we find them. With our intellect, with our wit and our wisdom and our unwillingness to shrink from the fight. Yeah, there is lunacy out there. There is. But there's also a caller on the line, and I hate to keep people waiting. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Well, hey, Bob.
I love that lunacy part, you know?
Well, they are. They're nuttier than the Christmas fruitcakes that'll start circulating in the mail pretty soon.
Nuts and fruits, or fruits and nuts. I swear to God. Wait a minute. Is this Wednesday?
No, it's Friday, and maybe we're just time traveling a little bit.
We backstepped a couple of jumps.
Yeah, backslid, maybe.
Backslid. Hey, Bob, please tell me it isn't true. Obama, our president-elect, has not taken office yet.
No, he hasn't.
And he won't for a couple more days, you know. Last time I checked, it's like January 21st?
Yeah, it's last I checked.
Yeah. And then he goes up for the inaugural ball and all that happy stuff. And I doubt seriously if he and Michelle walked walk hand in hand with their children down Main Street or whatever street that is, they walk down, that I doubt they would, anybody would throw an egg at them. Not even one little, little dove's egg, you know?
Yeah, I know. And meanwhile, the leaders of the world won't shake the hand of George Bush anymore.
Well, I wouldn't shake his hand if he came to my house.
Not me either.
Yeah, dog, get out of here. That's exactly what they tell him. Dog, get out of here.
Yeah.
I just sent my shepherd out of the room. He just came charging in here, wanting me to stroke him, pet him,
yep,
give him love, you know. And I sent him out of the room. Dog, get out of here. And that's exactly what they're doing to George Bush. And, Bob, we have to do it to the Republican Party and to the fundies. You talk about them incessantly because you're tired of them. And it's time we just tell them, dog, get out of the room.
You know, yeah.
If you spell the word backwards, you'll come up with another word that, you know, I will not say in vain.
Yeah, I know.
I will not, you know, but dog, get out of the room. Because these are backward people. They are backward from that deity that they so love.
But the thing I think we have to bear in mind is there are a lot of people who are making a mighty nice living off of religious fundamentalism. And that's always the way it is, whether it's Muslim fundamentalism, phony Christian fundamentalism, or any kind of fundamentalism. The people advocating it, Bob, get rich off of it.
Brother Bob, how many diamond rings do you have on your fingers? How many Cadillacs do you have parked in your driveway? How many? Oh, excuse me.
So far, we're at zero.
Yeah, me too. Okay, me too. I don't go that way. I cannot understand how people of goodwill would give to people of such vile, and I mean vile, whatever. They just have no one else that they care about. They don't even, they don't care about their own children.
No, yeah.
They don't. They just have no family values. They've got that friends of the family or family friends or whatever they, you know, that big whatever. But it's going under, too. Just like GM, Ford, Chrysler, soon Toyota, and the other ones, the Maxima, they're all going down because we have to, as a human race, either change our ways, and if we go back to the time when wind power really drove this world. I mean, sailors sailed the ocean. They used hemp as to make their ropes, to make their sails.
Yep.
And the wind drove the earth, and the people lived with nature. And then whatever happened to the North American continent happened because some people figured out how to use a sail, and they got across the ocean. And we have come to this point where it's going to change again, Bob. I'm sorry, but it's true. This is the end of the great American empire. We have to change, Bob. We have to give up that idea that we are the policemen of the world, that we are the masters of the universe, that we own everything that we put our hands on or our minds to take, that we can just take and take and take and never have to give anything back. And that's what this nation has become. It isn't what the founders wanted us to become. They wanted us to become a nation of people, of human beings that cared about our neighbors. But now we have been taught, we have been coerced, we've been just pounded down to believe that we have no value, Bob, by everything is always monetary, or it's how much gold do you have, how much silver do you have, how much riches can you, you know, store up. Now, if the fundies would really go back and look at their Bible, not mine, or, you know, and not yours either, because I know yours is a Bible that is, it dwells in your heart, Bob. It isn't in your mind. It's in your being. It's that thing that tells us that my neighbor, though he may be of another race, is also my brother.
Well, you say of another race. You raise a question that I've been thinking about more and more often, Bob. And that, you know, I follow science stories, and News Ninja Gene is really good to get them along to me. We've actually found planets outside our solar system now. We don't suspect them. We've seen them, Bob.
I know.
And they're not small. They're not the right kind of thing to foster the kind of life that we would understand or recognize as life, so the scientists say.
But
the odds are going up that planet does exist.
Absolutely. There are, I watch the Science Channel too. I love that National Geographic and Nova Am. Oh, wait a minute. Nova Am, that's Mike Malloy. He's kind of scary. You know, but stop for a moment. There are things outside of this small little solar system that we live in, and we have no idea of what is out there, because we're too busy thinking about what what we're going to do tomorrow. But tomorrow, whoever said that what's good for GM is good for America?
Several senators?
Yeah, but listen. Just because they build these cars that took away that beautiful coach that you used to buy, and the coach had to go by it, you can't get a six-up anymore. You can't go out here and jump on a stagecoach, go a six-up, and ride off to Denver and see Ronnie Reagan out there in the, what was that, the Death Valley days. See, and we're not cowboy nation anymore, Bob. We either become members of the human race, of this these little what are we? Flesh and bone and blood and thought.
Yeah.
You know, we either become a member with all other entities on this planet. Everyone, the Brits, the Russians, the French, the Germans, the Israelis, the Egyptians, and the Iranians, you know?
Yeah, even them.
Yeah, even them. You know, we either start learning to get along, not to go along, but just to learn what we are. You know, soon we will have our first, and I've heard this so many times on the MSM, mainstream media, about how we're going to have our first black president. Oh, my God. Is that like saying we're going to have our first human president? A first human being is going to be president? I mean, for all I know, he is the first intelligent man that's going to take the office because he's black. My God, Bob. Oh, wait a minute, but he's part white, so whoops, that may negate. You thought I was going to say the other word, too. Negate the fact that he's black. But, Bob, he's human. But he's also, and this is more important, whether he's black or white, he is intelligent.
You know, that's the one that gets me. That's the part that really brings it home for me. He's sharp. I've been kind of rough on him the last two or three days over this this creepy dude that he's appointed to be attorney general.
Hey.
And I'm still disturbed about that guy.
Bob, when you're picking out of a barrel of crazy monkeys, you know, I mean, think about it. You've got a whole nation of people. You've got a whole earth full of intelligent people that you could choose to be in your cabinet. But you've only got a finite amount of crazy monkeys that have been involved in this process that he's trying to kind of wheedle out, or, you know, kind of like try to shake up the grain and the chaff and let the wind blow some of the bad stuff away. He's working, Bob. He's trying to figure out, okay, who can I put here to, you know, kind of grab that part of the, you know, whatever it is, a big sheet or whatever. You put your wheat in the middle and you got all the chaff in there and you start throwing it up in the air. Who can I get that has enough savvy to get me through the first 100 and some odd days or 200 and some odd days or first 365 days of my office? And he wants people that have been there and done that. He doesn't want you and I, because guess what, Bob? If you and I, hey, you and I both want change, but this man, he is intelligent enough to get some people that he can direct and, you know, kind of, come on, all right, go do that. And they don't do it right. Well, if they don't do it right after enough time, he's going to say, oh, okay, I'm going to get somebody else that can do it right. You're fired. Get the hell out of here. And he can, at any time, change those people out. That includes Ms. Clinton. Okay? He can get another Secretary of State if she doesn't do her job. And he can get another whatever. He can say, you're fired, get the hell out of my office. Okay, I'm going to get another one. So, I would say give him the opportunity to put together the best that he can under the short period of time he's got to do it in. And don't second guess the man. He's got a hell of a load on his shoulders. When he goes into office, Bob, he's throwing down a rope, and we need to at least give him the chance to drag something out of that cesspool that they call Washington, D.C., or the Beltway Boys and Girls. He needs that opportunity, and by God, Bob, we need to give it to him. And shut up. We need to sit down for a minute and give him a chance to do his job. At least let him get in the office and take charge before we start slamming him for every damn decision he makes before he makes a decision.
Right, and that is not what I was doing. I was criticizing the decision that he had made.
I know, but I'm not.
Bob, you were talking a minute ago about how we have to recognize that, you know, we're all brothers and sisters here.
Yes, and that's the thing.
But Chiquita Bananas is not my brother or my sister.
No, they're not. And no.
And when they hire out the murder of 4,000 of my human brothers and sisters, I got a problem with that.
Chesty did, and so did Smedley D. Butler. He went down there and propped those people up long before you and I were born.
True enough.
And the thing is,
and you know, it's partly because of reading somebody like Smedley Butler, you know, two medals of honor and a brevet. You know, I don't think you can do that anymore. It's partly because of reading him that and his, you know, his the recognition that came to him when all was said and done, that he'd been an enforcer for American business. And I, if I'm not mistaken, within the pages of War is a Racket, he specifically mentions United Fruit.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Chiquita Bananas right in there.
And, well, Chiquita Brands is the successor in interest, the bastard stepchild, if you will, of
right.
United Fruit.
And Coca-Cola is...
Nestle, Coca-Cola, Del Monte.
Coca-Cola is the drink of the death squads, Bob. You know?
Yeah.
You know, they are that, and we know it. You and I and every other intelligent human being that has studied this.
Isn't it charming that a couple of decades back Coca-Cola's motto was Coke adds life?
Yeah. No, they take life, Bob.
Yeah,
they
Coke takes life. Now, the best part of that, though, was when Coca-Cola was introduced into Asian Pacific Rim, English doesn't translate directly word for word into Asian tongues.
No.
And in dealing with some of the Asian continental languages, the Coca-Cola people didn't get the best of translators. And when it first went on the market, Coca-Cola sold like hotcakes, Bob. Everybody was snapping it up.
Yep.
Because they had all these Coca-Cola billboards all over town, and they'd had Coke adds life translated into the local tongue.
Mm-hmm.
Which turned out to be saying that Coca-Cola brings your dead ancestors back to life.
Yeah.
Not a joke.
I know it's not a
but
joke.
But in Colombia, it's the exact opposite. And that's what bugs me about this attorney general designee, Bob.
I know.
And the guy is, and see, it's not like it's over. Right now, as we speak, Eric Holder is lead counsel for Chiquita Brands in trying to keep the widows and the orphans of those slaughtered human beings from making Chiquita pay them some money for the murders they sponsored.
But, Bob, remember during the campaign, you and I both said, this is not our candidate, but he is the least of two evils. And we know that some of the people he will drag up from his dredges will be those evil people that supported him and the corporations with him. Bob, please remember our candidate, yours and mine, had a different name. His first name wasn't Dennis, was it? Kucinich was his last name.
Yep.
And that is the truth, Bob. I support Dennis. And if he's a menace in this Congress, he will help us to bring this president's feet to the fire. And we can hold his feet to the fire. Because he made a lot of promises, Bob, while this president-elect was campaigning. But let us go back to our beginnings, where you and I are. Because you turned left at birth. I turned left when I was reborn. I wasn't reborn as a Democrat. I was reborn as a... Excuse me, I'm going to use a bad word here. A messed up veteran. When I realized that what I had done for all the years of service that I had given this country, I came back screwed up, and I didn't know which way to turn. I had to get into rap groups with other veterans that were in the same mess that I had been in. And I came home wondering what the hell happened. Because I watched a country going down the tubes. And this, you know, I had Gerald Ford as my president. And I wondered, what happened to Nixon? You know, hey, where'd he go?
Where'd the old crook go?
Yeah, yeah.
Who's the new crook?
No, I came home, and I had to report. I didn't even know it was happening, that this was jumping off the end of the pier. You know what I mean? And that's where I came. I came home to report, and, you know, whatever. And then this gentleman, this peanut farmer from the South, took him out. His name was Jimmy Carter, Gentleman Jimmy. And he was a gentleman, a decent man, a true humanist. I mean, well, maybe not. Maybe he was really one of them. I believe in Southerners. I don't know. But he actually tried to help us. He really did. But then along came Ronnie and the boys. And now we're at where we're at right now. So let's stop trying to second guess what will happen in this Obama administration. Please. Let us stop trying to figure out what's going to happen. Let's realize we didn't get the best man, but we got a better man than McCain. Okay? And maybe something good will come. I doubt it. I seriously do. But maybe we won't go into total chaos. Maybe we won't turn against our neighbor. For a change. Maybe we will take a look at...
Well, that's where I'm hanging my hat, Bob. I'm hanging my hat on the fact that this guy, this soon-to-be president, is going to display within his cabinet and within the government and to the world the leadership that he displayed to us...
In the campaign.
That's where I'm hanging my hat.
And the truth is this, Bob, okay? I may not like him as a human being if I ever met him, but I wouldn't doubt this one bit, that if we give him a chance and get behind him, I mean really get behind him, and then ask those other elected officials that we have put into the Senate and into the House of Representatives to do their job for a change. Maybe, just maybe, we the people do still exist. Or maybe not, but it's up to us, we the people. Either we the people are the government, or they, those selected few that consider themselves elite and much better than us, smelly little wogs that live down here in the, what is that Mike Malloy has there? He has Smeagol. You know, he has Smeagol called.
Yeah, I haven't heard from him in a while.
I haven't either, but I listen to Malloy all the time. I haven't heard Smeagol call. But, you know, hey, I'd like to hear from Smeagol. And maybe he could call up Malloy and give us his rendition of the Lord of the Rings, and maybe we will have that.
Find out where, find out where Dim Leader's going to go and spend his retirement. Hey Bob, I got to roll along. They're beginning to stack up on me here, but great way to get the show started. I appreciate it.
Love to you. Your family, and to our family, Bob, all those who walk this earth that love freedom and just will not lie down and just let it happen. We have to make a difference. And Obama may not be the man we wanted, but he's the man we got. And by God, let's all of us keep his feet the fire. Let us all pledge to do our part to make the man do his job for a change.
Hear, hear. Bob, take care, and our best to yours as well.
Good night.
All right.
God bless.
You too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
There on the high plains of North Dakota, our buddy Bob. Hey, welcome to the program.
deep in the heart of Dixie. This would be Kate.
Oh, we are having a geography lesson tonight, aren't we?
Yeah, I'm a little bit south of Belzona.
Yeah, Belzona, yes.
Not to mention
North Dakota.
Huh?
Not to mention being a little bit south of North Dakota, too.
Oh, very south and a little, just a tad east. I've across a couple of big rivers. I had to get here to cross those rivers, whatever. Yeah. I was logged on and was listening to your opening and was just going along, and then all of a sudden somebody came in and donated a couch, and so I had to go out and help move furniture into the...
Yeah, but now you can listen to the show on the couch.
The phone, I'm going to have to readjust. It's a great couch. I went and snuck a sit on it, and it's a great couch, but it's going to be donated to somebody.
Who needs it.
It needs it, yes. And I missed, for one thing, I missed the self-esteem makes arrogant kids, and the but that's my problem. I'll go back in the archives and listen.
No, I just did the headline.
Oh, okay. And can you explain to me what pole dancing is?
Oh, dear. Well,
I mean,
see,
my mind went,
Kate,
you know,
dear.
My mind went way far out where it was probably shouldn't. I don't
know. No, you probably didn't. How do I do this?
An Olympic event. Yes, those are
yes, they want it to be an Olympic event, and it involves a dance floor and a brass pole that is bolted into the floor and bolted into the ceiling so as to make it stationary. And then there are places where scantily clad women, in exchange for dollar bills tucked into G-strings and garters and shoe straps, dance about in a, shall we say, salacious fashion, and then wrap themselves around the pole and hang upside down from it and slide down it with the, I mean, it really is kind of pretty, it's a fairly athletic undertaking.
I know, okay, then I know what pole dancing, those days are long gone.
Kate, that's pole dancing. D-A-I-N-T-Z-I-N apostrophe, pole dancing.
Dainton.
Because we are working on your vernacular and your vocabulary while you're down there. That's what this semester is.
I have a great. Anyway, I'm not so old that I don't remember pole dancing, but you said the Mormons wanted to make it an Olympic event.
Yes. Mormon pole dancing.
Okay. Whatever. I thought I.
But you know the thing is, if you're doing it Mormon style, it means you've got to have five or six poles in the room. Because you got to have all the wives doing it at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I just didn't even want to go there.
But the best part of the video though was the young woman who teaches the class. You remember when we had the news story about the Church of Christ pastor's wife in Western Tennessee who shot her husband in the back with a 12 gauge shotgun.
Uh huh.
And in as part of her trial, she testified that he wanted her to do god-awful things like wear them hooker heels.
Uh-huh.
And they showed the hooker heels, you know, with the platforms about 4 inches tall and the heels about six and the strappy thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then she showed the wig that he wanted her to wear.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the best part of this video was the part where they showed the woman who teaches the Mormon ladies how to pole dance. And she said, "See, I even wear the shoes."
Oh, God.
Honest to God, I mean, I haven't seen any of these in a long time because I haven't been into one of those establishments in a long time.
I see.
4-inch platform, 6-inch heels. She said, "They're only to help me get a grip on the pole."
Oh, God.
I mean, yeah, I can just hear Bob Costas now. Coming up next on NBC. Pole dancing live from the 2012 London Olympics. The Mormon squad is favored to take the gold and bury it in the ground somewhere.
Oh, dear. Okay. I just guess I needed a refresher. I thought I wasn't quite sure.
Oh, no. Now, see, if I'd had time to actually write that joke, it would have been the Mormons are expected to take the gold and bury it in the ground somewhere near Palmyra, New York. That's how.
God, yeah. Well, all right. Oh, God. I didn't know where I was going to jump into the stream. I didn't know it was going to be off of a pole. sliding down the pole.
You never know what, you know, I'm just a 3-hour audio gumball machine. You drop the money in and you do not know what's going to happen.
Yeah, but if they turn out to be blue licorice, I don't want that. I'll just log off and go home to
sleep. Well, I won't take that one neither. I always hold out for the purple grape ones or the orange ones.
Icky poo. Anyway, I heard a story the other morning on Morning Edition, and about the was called Murder on the White Boy on the Wrong Side of Murder Creek or something. It was written by a guy who was involved in the civil rights movement and the three fellows that got killed up at Philadelphia, and he had said he was the most unlikely person to be involved in the civil rights. His daddy was a Klansman in Alabama and his mama was something, but they converted and, you know, his dad went through a conversion and whatever. But the kicker in the story was that, and he wrote this pretty good book. Anyway, the kicker was that he said to the interviewer, "No, ma'am, my mama cut daddy's robes up and made us Sunday school shirts." Is that wonderful? he did have a conversion. I think he went to Israel to convert the Jews to Christians, and he came back and they said he was asked, did you convert any Jews? He said, "No, but they converted me," meaning they transformed his life and his attitudes and stuff. And then they started attending their Methodist church or whatever they were. But Mama cut up Daddy's robes and made us Sunday school shirts. I just thought that was the sweetest thing.
That is sweet. That's sweet and sweet tea.
I thought it was kind of lovely. And then this morning I heard our esteemed, no, it was not him. It was another man. They were interviewing mayors and boards of supervisors and people about the economy up in the Delta area. And I can't do Delta dialect, and so it sounds like you and Colonel, whoever calling, you know, when he calls in.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
That guy, yeah. Only I can't do Delta. Anyway, they were talking about the economy and how they're trying to recover and the education and how they're trying to build up the education system, because Mississippi is the bottom of the heap in terms of education. And this old boy from I don't know what town, someplace up in the Delta, obviously white, probably over 50 or probably over 60, and he kept going on and on and on about what the problem was in the school was that the children needed to have parental guidance.
Yeah, perennial.
And I thought...
I've heard it, you know, down that way. I've also heard it periental.
And I thought...
And, you know, that's just not very damn far from perineal.
Yeah. And I thought he just maybe just slipped, and maybe he meant yearly or ongoing. Every year they'd... Whatever. And he said it over and over and over again, and I thought... This is the mayor of a town. This is a elected public official,
mm-hmm.
And he's discussing the problems with education in Mississippi, and that it's not the problem of the state. It's the problem the children need perennial guidance.
Right. That's because the talent pool's a little shallower.
Poor guy. And I thought, at first I thought it was funny, and then now I'm thinking it's not so funny. You know, I've been sitting on this for about 2 days. I've just thought, God, I gotta call.
Yeah, grammaticalistical guidance.
Yeah, right. Oh, God, and it's not funny. It ain't a damn bit funny.
Yeah. Periodontal guidance.
Yeah, right.
Some damn bleeding gums that keeps them so stupid.
Oh, God. Something scary I heard the other day that I didn't realize when I'm just kind of bopping around the web pages when I have time. And I saw about the economy and how bad, you know, how bad it's getting, and we're not paying any attention to it, and we really don't know because it's not in our front yard, backyard, or in our face, or in our grocery store. In Long Beach, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of Toyotas and other imported cars sitting on the docks. They call it locked in first gear. And I thought, oh, my God, because I used to drive at the docks or at the auctions and stuff. And I thought, oh, Jesus, you know, like transmission. No.
Yeah, well, because you used to see those on ads, Kate, for, you know, say, your local Toyota dealership. I mean, I remember seeing it. Thousands of Toyotas wait on the docks to be delivered to happy buyers all across the United States. It's our semi-annual Clear the Docks sale at Bob and Ed's Toyota-thon.
Well, this wasn't locked in. It was not. It was they're sitting there because the trucks that come to deliver them, I mean, the trucks that come to haul them away, have either quit or been fired, laid off, or whatever, or they can't afford the fuel.
Right.
There's no way to get them off of the docks, and so they're sitting there, just sitting.
Well, but the thing is, at this point, if you get them off the docks, you can get them to the lots.
Yeah.
But they ain't leaving the lots.
No.
And because of the nature of the pyramid scheme that is the auto, the auto selling industry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know a lot about it, but I do know some. The dealer is at the bottom end of the food chain, just mm-hmm. right above the stupid person who buys a brand new car.
Oh, right.
And as such, they eat the cost. You know, it costs money to keep the car on the lot. In other words, they're on the hook for, you know, it's not like they're just providing a convenient place for Detroit or Tokyo or wherever to park their cars until some willing sucker comes along and buys one. These are all, and so even if the trucks got them there, it's getting to the point where they can't afford to sit there either.
No.
And what I think you have sort of drawn a circle around, made a little Venn diagram out of, or maybe it's a Zen diagram, I don't know.
What was the other word? I thought that's what you said.
Venn.
V-I-N?
V-E-N-N, I think.
Okay. I thought you meant like VIN numbers on the vehicle.
Well, see, that works too.
Oh, Jesus. How'd we get into this street? What? Bubble.
bubble. Just like shrimp.
Yeah, there you go.
But anyway.
Jumbo shrimp.
Mm-hmm. Fried shrimp. Bald shrimp gumbo,
don't
shrimp
start.
Jambalaya.
Food porn in the chat room.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go there. Mm-hmm.
But we joke and we kid and we play, but what you sort of pointed out is that, and David in Tennessee did a couple of nights ago as well, we tend to think that, for instance, if Detroit just shows its belly to the world and sits there floating in the bowl, that everybody else just pick up the slack.
Mm-mm.
But we are we, and we are the United States of America, and when we get that tickly feeling in the back of our throat, the rest of the world gets pneumonia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're way too interconnected to let that happen.
And so, you know, I don't have any good feelings at all about some sort of a bailout. And I have been trying to do a little background reading. Guess who is in, and it, you know, it all just ties together. You remember, of course, that Chrysler is now majority owned by Cerberus Holdings?
Yeah.
And you, of course, know who Cerberus was.
Mm-hmm.
Multi-headed, big, drippy-fanged dog sitting at the gates of hell.
Mm-hmm.
Or Hades, actually, to be mm-hmm. properly Greek.
Mm-hmm.
Cerberus Holdings owns the majority of Chrysler. And somewhere, and there in Cerberus Holdings, in a corner office, is Vice President, formerly of the United States, now Vice President of Cerberus Holdings, Dan Quayle, spending his busy working days hanging E's on the end of words that don't have them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were proud to announce a few years back that they had struck a deal with the auto manufacturer of the People's Republic of China, and that they were going to start importing in what was described as 2 to 4 years, and that was 2 to 4 years ago, they were going to start importing cars manufactured with Chinese slave labor.
Hmm.
Now, they didn't say they were going to import cars made with Chinese slave labor, but that's the kind of labor you have in the People's Republic of China.
Mm-hmm.
Kids strapped to tables and blowing up in fireworks factories, things like that. I mean, it's all documented.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Chrysler had bought an interest in importing Chinese automobiles, but now it appears that an organization, a company called Shanghai Automotive Industry Corporation. Yeah, a little bit redundant there. Shanghai Automotive Industry Corporation is giving serious thought to just buying Detroit.
Well, that would keep people working.
Yes, it would. And singing and carrying around Chairman Mao's little red book of happy cultural revolution sayings.
And they'd be able to say UAW. At least it's not, there's no L like AFL-CIO. They could say UAW.
Yeah, because they're going to be gone, baby.
Well, they can pronounce UAW.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've all seen A Christmas Story.
By Detroit, that would be, well, that's a solution, all right.
Yeah, it would be a joint venture of SAIC, Shanghai Automobile Industrial Corporation, and Dongfeng.
Mm.
And
clever.
Well, I mean, just is what it is. But the fact that they're going to, wow, because see.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can go and buy a share of General Motors right now for less money than lunch would cost me at McDonald's.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, just let that sink in.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fairly ugly. Well, in that vein, that, you know, talking about solutions rather than the problems, because the problems are so glaring and, will he pull us out of the economic crash? And we must back him. And get out of here. That isn't even so far off of my radar screen. But what things that like this? There's a doctor here in Jackson County, Mississippi, who has decided he doesn't want to do paperwork. He doesn't want to do insurance. He doesn't want to do all of that stuff. He charges a flat $40 for a visit to his office. $40. That's it. No paperwork. I mean, he keeps charts, obviously, but...
You mean no billing codes and that sort of thing?
No diagnose. You know, I mean, he probably uses a DSM-3 for diagnosis on the chart, but that's it. Yeah, he's just $40. That's it. He's just tired of the system. He just said, I'm just charging $40, and that's it. So I'm just going to go see him just to go in and pay him the $40 and sit and talk to him, because that's the only, what my perception is that's the only way we can fix things, like grow our own gardens, have our own personal medical people. There's a fellow over in Gulfport who, a doctor who, is charging a minimum like that, and he's pursuing medicine and wellness and prevention from a holistic point of view. I was told, he dabbles in physical fitness and diet and all that, and it dabbles? Well, you know what I mean. I said, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. So I'm just really encouraged that, I mean, that's the way I approach things. It's just like, screw it. The way you're doing it doesn't work. Don't work for me. Don't work for nobody else. So let's just do it this way. And but $40 for a visit, I just think. And I'm going to go find out how, you know, is he making it? Is he going to go under? Is he, you know, does he need volunteers? Does he need help? You know, I just want to go pursue that, because he's just bypassing the whole broken system and saying, let's do it this way. You know, you need health care. You know, let's do it this way. I don't know what he does for lab work and all that.
And that may be, to use that most hated words among the fundies, that may be the evolution of this process.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. the only way we just keep wallowing and screaming and wringing our hands and back of the hand to the forehead and the problem this is the problem is that. Well, screw it. We know what the problem is. Let's go have a solution. That one doesn't work. Let's go do it this way.
Oh, and by the way, a quick email in from our buddy David in Tennessee. The subject line, mayors in the Delta. Mayors in that part of Mississippi are not paid. The citizens in that part of the world are getting exactly what they're paying for.
Oh, well, thank you, Mr. Music Man. They don't get paid. Is he serious? He must be serious, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
Wow. Oh, that's like the sheriff in Alabama. The sheriffs in Alabama are tax collectors. They ain't law enforcement.
Well, they're the tax collectors here too. All of those oldie, especially oldie Southern tax collection structures, are based on the England at the time of King John.
Oh.
And the Magna Carta and that little run in at Runnymede.
The sheriff of Nottingham and all them guys.
Yeah. The high sheriff is a tax collector, and in fact, here in West Virginia, the county sheriff is paid X amount of dollars as his sheriff's salary, but then he gets a bonus based on the amount of taxes he is successful in collecting.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Hmm. My God.
And so the better tax collector you are, the better off you eat as a sheriff. And while he has a sheriff's law enforcement staff, as they do in Alabama, if you sit down and ask most sheriffs, what's your primary duty? Getting the taxes in.
Well.
Yeah, we'll let the state police take care of the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just called in just to say hey, and I. Cause
well, I want to run one past you before you go.
Okay.
If you don't mind.
No.
But we were talking about the pole dance and Mormons a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that story, and it's kind of a recurring story about how the Mormons baptize dead people and mm-hmm. turn them into dead Mormons.
Mm-hmm.
And I was all pissed off, and you know how I get, offended, and
mm-hmm. you and Gene had a good time in that stream.
Well, yeah. Because Gene was one of the proxy doctors.
Yeah, I heard that. It was chilling. I lived in Rexburg, Idaho, and that town is really spooky. It's like everybody, I'm jumping on your story, but it's like Stepford Wives place, and everybody looks the same, and when they go to the beauty shop, they all have the same kind of hairdos, and they all wear the same kind of tiny flowered print dresses. I mean, not tiny dresses. But
and their children get on the bus and scream, assassinate Obama.
Well, and the children in the grocery stores are all polite, and they're rosy-cheeked and bright-eyed, and they smile, and they say, thank you, ma'am, and they're just all polite and everything. Yeah, the kids on the school bus are a different story. But everybody's just so freaking polite. And at night, when I lived there doing hospice care for my mother, my apartment was like kind of close to downtown. There was not a peep of noise downtown after about 10 o'clock at night. Not a thing. Nice little sized town. Wide streets, big tall trees. I mean, beautiful, beautiful little town. But I felt like that right underneath the asphalt was this roiling kind of monster kind of thing in a Stephen King, it's under there, but you don't know.
Just beyond the reach of light are the children of the corn.
Right. Any moment now, it's going to break through that crack, some crack in the concrete or on the sidewalk, on the street, and it's going to go, wah, gotcha, and it's going to eat the whole town up. It was like living in a Stephen King novel.
Yeah.
And it was just so freaky, and everybody, the kids up at Rick's College, the Mormon College, I heard somebody call it Brigham Young Rexburg now. They must have gotten.
Oh, dear. Bigger.
Yeah. They all dressed alike. They wore white shirts and ties, and just like they do out on the street. And they were all on their way to some other country to invade and occupy and convert. And oh my God, it was just a spooky, spooky place. So I have no. When people talk Mormon to me, I think, scary people. Anyway, so I'm done trashing that church. Now go on.
Here's my pitch. For the rest of the evening, in light of the fact that, and I'm trying, like I said, I'm trying to come at this from a different angle, and frankly, I got the idea from a diary entry that I saw posted at Democratic Underground that was from Daily Kos. So it's three generations out.
Mm-hmm.
They baptize people who are dead
uh-huh.
and turn them into little dead Mormons.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why can't we do that?
Turn them into little dead Baptists?
No. I think there's all kinds of options out there, and I'm inviting audience participation and audience ideas.
Uh-huh.
In light of what they did with Proposition Hate, the Mormons.
Mm-hmm.
I personally think we should baptize Joseph Smith as a little dead drag queen.
I like that, yeah.
make him a posthumous member of the Order of the Purple Boa. Or a 49th degree acolyte of the Society of the Flaming Toaster.
What?
And we can come up with all kinds of rituals, Kate. And in fact, I've got a link here.
Why do you have to baptize him and make him a boy?
No, purple boa, not boy.
I know. I said, why would he, if you're dead, you can come back as anything or be anything. You can.
Well, that's true, too.
Why does it have to be gender specific? Why couldn't we make him a girl who is? Never mind. Go ahead.
No, I understand.
You have it. You have it right there. What? You have it right
no,
there.
No, I was just going to say, you know, we can write the rituals.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, Joseph Smith wrote his own Bible.
Mm-hmm.
That he had and came and invented the tribe, invented the Israelite tribe of Ishmael.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jefferson took all the miracles out of his Bible. So, you know, we can do anything what we want.
I mean, you know, we could, we could baptize them as posthumous Hasidim, seeing how they're so loopy about baptizing Jews who were murdered in the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, whatever they would find most horrifying,
mm-hmm.
because they are so ignorant and so intolerant and so disgusting with their hate. And the first thing, we could declare that down in the grave, Joseph Smith has grown a wig just like Divine in Hairspray.
There you go. Oh God.
That Joseph Smith is somewhere in the afterlife, attending ballroom dancing classes with J. Edgar Hoover.
In wetsuits. Okay.
But only, no, in wetsuits, but only with a stunning cocktail frock and lots of frou-frou over it. Right.
And those 4-inch platforms with...
4-inch platforms, 6-inch heels, and a pole. Now, do you see how it works? See how it just kind of grows?
Just comes around. I wanted to ask, is it somebody... It must be a Southern thing. I mean, I know it's a Southern thing, but it could be... It's not Southern, but I guess it's just obvious because I'm here. I walked in this morning to, there was a bowl of grits sitting on my desk with butter, yellow something. I guess it was butter and salt and pepper laying next to it. It was from the Crystal Drive-In, whatever. And she said,
You're taunting me. You're the one that told me no food porn.
Just wanted something warm in your belly because it's cold out there today. I thought, oh, God, okay, whatever. So sometime later I ate the grits. They were a little bit warm, and I didn't have put any sugar on them like a northerner. You know, I didn't want to show my ignorance.
Silly Yankee.
And I'd never eaten them with salt and pepper and butter before, and I thought, oh, damn, these are pretty good. They're like eating soggy.
I'm going to go put my head in a bucket. You never had grit. You never had salt and pepper and butter on your grits?
No, sir.
Oh, what are we going to do with you?
I've had them. If I don't eat them in private with sugar on them, I eat them in public with red-eye gravy, okay? Now leave me the hell alone.
Okay. See, now I see, after the show, I'm going to have to go and read the part in To Kill a Mockingbird where Calpurnia takes Scout out of the kitchen, out of the dining room, and into the kitchen to eat with her, and says, if you can't be polite to your dinner guests, you can sit back here with me. And she says, yeah. But Calpurnia, he's pouring sorghums on his biscuits and everything.
Oh, God, I love sorghum on my biscuits.
Because that was little Walter Cunningham. Well, you have your sorghums on your biscuit, but you don't go ahead and pour it all over. But Calpurnia, and he can pour it on the tablecloth if he wants to, because he is your guest.
Oh, God. Yeah, she was something, wasn't she?
Yeah, there's Lottie in the chat room. Maple syrup's good on a bumper.
On a what?
Bumper. You know, a car bumper.
Yeah, I know. Any maple syrup anywhere.
Yeah.
On the pole while you're dancing. because
then you kind of get a little. Then you get a little hung up.
Never.
And you don't want to be a Mormon lady with your skirts a flying up top of the pole, hung up on the maple syrup.
Let's do not go there because I will take it so far out you will start blushing. Okay. Now my
ain't no web camera on me.
My question, besides the grits on the desk this morning, later on, somebody walked in from East Biloxi, had been down doing a client survey or something, and had stopped at the bakery and brought back several long sacks of individually wrapped po' boy rolls, big French-looking
mm-hmm.
And I said, she gives me one. I mean, I don't eat white bread. I just said, thank you. And thought I'd send it home with my coworker person, landlady. And then somebody else walked over before they went home and said, here, have a banana. And I thought, what's this? What is this? Well, it's just winter, and we just need to keep our bellies full. And I thought, not a banana. Oh, my God. And I looked, and it was a dole. It wasn't a Chiquita. Oh, I can eat this.
Well, I found out last night that the Chiquita brands actually got out of the Colombian banana business shortly thereafter.
Right. Oh, okay. Oh,
they sold their subsidiary, which was called Banadex, which just sounds way too chemically for a banana.
Yeah.
They sold Banadex to another conglomerate for $43.5 million or something like that.
Okay.
So they're out of the Colombian banana business, and now I guess they're having death squads, you know, slaughter people in, I don't know, Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador.
Yeah. Well, bless their hearts. We just, oh, God. So so to end the day, I called. I'm working Angel Food Ministries tomorrow, doing the food, helping with the volunteering with the food distribution, and they're up to almost 200 people every month serving food.
Oh, my.
Yeah. That's just one distribution outlet in Gauthier and Ocean. There's Ocean Springs and all up and down the coast, but this is just this one particular church, and people get a real good deal on the food. For $30, you get a pretty good size box of food, and then there's specials and boxes of meat and fruit and vegetables and that sort of thing. Angel Food Ministries is on the webpage. If anybody needs help with purchasing their monthly food, and they do take food stamps, and they take cash, but not debit or credit cards. So, or they take money orders, cash.
Yeah, because they figure if you've got a debit or a credit card,
it's yeah, right. Yeah. Or they really don't have any way to process it. It's, you know.
Well, I know. And, no, I was being facetious, but it runs up. And see, that's another thing about the nature of our culture. Using a credit card costs money. It runs up the transactional cost.
Yeah. So
to the merchant.
It does. And so that's, I interrupted myself. Wanted to. I'm going into volunteer tomorrow. So anybody who needs help with their food, or their food budget, go on to Angel Food Ministries and see if there's a distribution point close by your place, by your house, and or within, you know, driving distance would help you out. Anyway, little Lanyap here. I called and told my friend. I'm coming over. I'm going to be done about 11 o'clock tomorrow, and I'll be over. Where can I meet you to give you the box of food? Because she donates it to her neighbor. And she said, well, and she's trying to make arrangements, and I'll just meet you at the office. I said, no, don't. Where are you? Well, we're over at the community center. So the short form of this is that the Phi Beta somebody, black women's sorority, one of those sororities, whoever mm-hmm. they are, they've invited me to lunch because they're feeding the elders over at Escatawa Community Center tomorrow. And she said, I'd like for you to be my guest. And I said, honey, I ain't even going to be wearing sorority clothes. And she said, you will be my guest. I'm like, oh, okay. So I got...
you can put the syrup all over the tablecloth if you want, Miss Kate.
I can go as an elder and I can...
Because you are the guest.
Sorghum on my biscuits.
Yeah. Now, for future reference, Kate. For future reference, even if you're tempted, the next time something like this happens, and I mean, just want to make sure that we've got all the bases covered,
mm-hmm.
never slice the banana into the grits. Don't do that.
Ooh, icky poo. Ooh.
Don't do that.
That makes me shiver.
Don't do that.
Oh, my God.
Well, hell, you put sugar and syrup in them. What am I supposed to think? I don't know when you're going to be taken over by some form of demonic Yankee possession and put something bizarre in your grits.
I probably won't ever put sugar on my grits ever again. I'll put salt.
If pepper. God meant sugar to go on grits, they wouldn't call it sweet corn.
There you go. I can't think I'd ever quit putting sugar in my cornbread, though. Mm-mm-mm.
No, if God wanted sugar in cornbread, he'd have called it cake.
Pound cake. I just wanted to, I haven't been on the air too much. I mean, I haven't been logging on because the Verizon crowd, they advertise on TV.
Yeah, the one that follows people around says, can you hear me now?
They don't hang out in my backyard.
No, you got one dude in the backyard going, we don't give a damn.
She said, what? Then we're out of here.
Well, you know, but at least Verizon hasn't cracked into your cell phone like they did Barack Obama's.
Oh, yeah, I heard that. I don't, yeah, like, who cares?
I know, but, you know, what I love is it almost has a prosaic quality, Kate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't, no, it wasn't Agent Fred in the bowels of the NSA picking up his mm-hmm. phone. Can you hear him now? Can you hear him now?
Yeah.
No, it was a bunch, apparently, if you believe Verizon, and I am very skeptical about this, but if you believe Verizon, it was a bunch of overly curious Verizon employees who said, let's see who he's calling.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's nothing private anymore anyway, so why is anybody surprised? God.
Well, right, exactly. I mean, I cherish and try to protect what of my privacy I can still have. But I looked on Google Earth the other day and realized that our local photograph had been, because it's all in sections and chunks and whatnot. But the flyover photograph from the satellite of where we are, I went, and lo and behold, we're a high-res photograph now, and you can see details of my house that I'd assume weren't seen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like the naked lady tied up next to the cow in the backyard is...
You can't see her.
You can't see her yet.
She's behind the bushes.
But Google's working on it.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you know, a while back, and when they first enunciated it, it seemed to make a little bit of sense. The Supreme Court, in interpreting the Fourth Amendment, said there are some places in this country where you have an absolute expectation of privacy. And there are some places where you don't. For instance, if you are pulled up at the stoplight next to the police cruiser and you're sitting there honking on a big spleef,
mm-hmm.
you don't have a reasonable expectation that the cop is not going to look over and watch you honking on your big doobie in the car.
Mm-hmm. Right.
On the other hand, unless you've done something to draw the attention of the police and you want to sit in the privacy of your home and do it,
mm-hmm.
the cops can't just knock down your door, wonder if anybody's smoking dope in there. And they drew that distinction.
But they do.
Well, yeah, they do. And that's what I said. You know, that was the camel's nose under the tent.
Mm-hmm.
To start drawing distinctions in privacy. But they do exist. Mm-hmm. And we tend to forget, and I don't because of the nature of what I do, we tend to forget that the Internet isn't some great public good out there.
No, no.
The Internet was created as with Pentagon dollars.
Mm-hmm. For scientific statistical analysis and research and development.
And then it sort of got added on to and added on to and added on to, and you wind up with what we've got and what is yet to come, and God only knows if that'll be good or bad, depending on how much they screw with it and how much free reign the corporate America gets with it.
And people need to quit having secrets, and then it won't be an issue.
Well, I ain't got nothing to hide. I don't need no Fourth Amendment.
Fourth Amendment? Oh, yeah, that one.
Well, I didn't know there was anything but the second and the first. The first one makes sure that I can go to church every Sunday and give away all my money. And the second one makes sure that I can have me a gun so I can go shoot my food because I can't afford to buy none because I give all my money to the church.
Yeah, buddy. Speaking of money, I was going to say earlier before I interrupted myself and then you interrupted my interruption is that I haven't been listening much because my Verizon folks don't hang out in the backyard very often. Sometimes they're there for 4 hours and they don't, and other times I can't stay logged on for, 90 seconds. And don't you know how crazy that gets me? Well, off and on, off and on. Disconnect. Mercy, it's like living in Arizona on a landline in a monsoon. So I'm supposing that, as usual, your pitch that you do for listener contributions, listeners send in the money, listeners, we didn't make the goal this month, listeners.
All that embarrassment, all that stuff that makes me want to crawl under the desk.
I'm assuming that your pitches are inadequate as usual, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say to people, I don't know how the contributions are going, but it's holiday time, and last year they were awful, and just barely squeaked by without getting the telephone poles torn down. If people think that we can just sit back and let somebody else do it, they're sadly mistaken. We have got to all contribute if this is going to keep going. Can you imagine logging on some night, 5 o'clock Central, wherever you're at, and there's dead air, and they're not even playing Vivaldi's Four Seasons, and so that could
vary. That day when you just type in headonradionetwork.com and it just comes up 404 not found.
Error on page. It's gonna happen, and if we don't start sending in contributions, and I know that. Don't even go there. Those who can contribute, thank you. Those who do. I'll bet there ain't 50 people who send money into this endeavor. And I just, that makes me.
No, there aren't, Kate. There aren't.
That makes me really ashamed. And I may as well just go ahead and say it. I feel really, really resentful. Really resentful. Because people are calling. Maybe all the callers contribute. I don't know. But I just feel like there's people all over the world who are listening, and not doing a thing to contribute to the well-being of the horn. And I have for over a year, and I just never did say it. But I'm just resentful that people aren't contributing their fair share. If we all sent in $10, I know, things are really tight. Bullshit. If you're smoking or drinking beer or you're driving an extra 5 or 10 miles to take a side trip someplace in the car, you could have put that in an envelope and sent it to West Virginia. I mean, Pete, there is money. There is.
Well,
money.
Let me... I know exactly.
Make excuses for people.
No. I know what you are saying, not what you're trying to say.
Thank you. I never try to say anything.
By the way, a reminder out there for folks who want to do it this way, something really fun. Chat moderator and videographer and now horn store manager. ELO, Sue.
ELO, yeah. Hey, girl.
She took it upon herself and built the Head On Radio store at Cafe Press. You want a Head On Radio t-shirt? You want a Head on Radio bumper sticker? Mouse pad? Coffee mug? There's all kinds of fun stuff over there. Cafe Press, CafePress, .com/Head on Radio.
Mm-hmm.
That's another way of supporting the horn in more than one way. You know, well, horn, what's that? You know, on a T-shirt or a bumper sticker. That's one way. But I don't want to put too fine a point on what you just said, Kate.
Well, I'm just saying that there are people who call in, and don't send a goddamn dime, and that just pisses me off. I'm sorry. I just went way over the top.
That's okay.
Should have hung up 20 minutes ago. I ain't got no class.
No. You say what the spirit leads you to say, Sister Kate. But just to point out something, so that folks know that we're not talking about that this isn't some academic discussion. There is a profound likelihood. I don't know it for certain, but there's a likelihood that things are going to get really bad, really soon.
Yes.
There are things, for instance. We've talked about them in the past. The equipment that needs to be in line that can't be because it's done for. This stuff doesn't last forever.
You got that monster sitting there that just you and Peter have been limping along on that thing for so long. I don't know if you ever got it rebuilt, but
There's that. There are things that need to be repaired. There are things that need to be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
We had two websites.
Mm-hmm.
There's headonradionetwork.com, but long ago, well, but it's stayed up, headonradio.com. And frankly, in the midst of keeping everything else paid for, that went down.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't go down because I'm blowing anybody off. It didn't go down because I decided it wasn't worth having.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that website since I went on the air.
Mm-hmm.
It went down because there was not money to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. That's just one little crack in the system. It's just the beginning. And because it's not in anybody's face, it's not on their stream, it's not when they call in, they didn't even know it was gone, they never knew it existed in the first place, but it's just chip, 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 chipping away, and some night there's not even going to be that classical music that, oh, we can't dance to that, as Peter says.
And you can't. You cannot dance to Vivaldi.
No, but I...
Not unless you're a 16th century Italian.
I typed my fingers to the bone all through school to that. Every time I had a term paper to type on my IBM Selectric, I put on Four Seasons, and my fingers are wired to that music. Except now I'm beginning to hate it, because every time I hear Four Seasons, it means that your mic's not hot. And I hate it. But every time I hear, you know, I used to hear, whenever I hear Four Seasons, I wanted to go type a term paper, you know. So you can't dance to it, but you sure can type to it.
Oh, yeah, because when you're typing to it, I've done the same thing. When you're typing to it, it's like you're playing the little... The little clavichord or the little harpsichord.
And it inspired me to keep typing, and I played the tape over and over and over and over again until the term paper was done. And so, anyway, the point is, I'm just one more time, I just want to say, anybody who's not sending any money in, anybody who's not contributing, doesn't have to be, it can be $5, just $5. It might have been $5 that would have kept that web page from going over the edge. Any amount of money, just send it in, because the horn, you think the economy's bad, how bad is it going to be if we don't have the horn every night? Mm-hmm. Oh, there you go. And this was just going to be silly bubbles, and I was just not going to, but I should have started out with this and then got it over with and got to the giggling later on.
We're still here. We're still here.
you're multitasking on your 25 open windows.
19 open tabs, but yeah.
Gotcha. You're waiting on me to talk longer so you can answer somebody's email.
No, I am not. Now you quit that.
Be nice.
No, I was reading a PM from ELO. who was telling me some of the other stuff that, she's up to right now. She said she's working on new designs and that we'll be having sales for Christmas.
Woo! Okay.
And we're gonna have we'll have some promos to run during the show, and it'll all be it's gonna be very, very cool. And you know, that's
oh,
the
you rock girl. That's she's listening, I guess.
Yes, she does.
Yes,
and she
yes.
is.
Yes, I also want to.
The chat room den mother? Are you kidding?
I just want to say hey to the chat room. I'm not, I don't log in there anymore for obvious reasons, because I just, and besides, I had to buy a new computer up in Montana, and I haven't bothered to sit down and load the Java, whatever that stuff is, and get into the chat room, and then, you know, I mean, I just, and then doing that sitting in the front seat of the truck in a parking lot is just a pain in the butt, so, and I don't, I always forget, and I don't have time to go in the chat room and play like I usually did back then, way back in the day. So anyway, oh, and just to let people know how things are going on down here, I'm not even talking about Katrina relief and that sort. We got some coverage, Coast got some coverage in USA Today on page, it's on the web, page 8, that's 8A, 8A, and there's a pretty, about, I had several columns about what's going on with people moving out, having to move out of their FEMA trailers, and the March deadline's coming, and we thought it would go smoother than this, but obviously it's, we're having some troubles, and yada, 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 and that's what I'm doing here, just pushing papers in them legal files that have five folders, you know, when you open the front one, and then you've got a center fold, and then you got another one, and then you got the back one with all those metal things that you got to open, and, you know, the clasps, you know, the legal files. I'm doing that every day, every day, every day. So it's, things aren't good down here, and, but we just keep pressing on, and people keep feeding me, and I just don't understand why I had grit sitting on my desk this morning.
You're going to have to get over your white bread bigotry.
Oh.
If somebody made that, it's a must-eat.
Oh, it came from Crystal Drive-In.
Oh, the bread did?
Oh, no, it was from the bakery in East Biloxi. Yeah.
And that might be some fine bread.
But I don't eat white bread. It just doesn't, I don't.
Okay.
It's a white bread bigotry. That's, ooh, you just nailed me to the wall.
Well, I can only say that because it was through the course of my life, Kate, I was 12 years old before I even ate the first piece of white bread, and probably 22 before I was willing to eat it on a regular basis. I would eat biscuits. I would eat other, but just to, you know, and to this day, that icky stuff that comes in a plastic bag with words like wonder and colonial and stuff like that on it, I'll go hungry. I will not eat that stuff.
Yeah, I didn't eat that.
That ain't bread.
We ate bread, and we had biscuits, and then this Granny Fitzner up in the, on the road up north, up above Grandma's house, had a little bitty grocery store on Grand Lake or something in Oklahoma, and we'd go up to Granny Fitzner's and get bread for Grandma, or bread for somebody, I don't know. And I hadn't even had sliced bread until I was way up in grade school. I mean, I don't know that I was.
Yeah, and see, that's what I'm getting at. There's bread and there's bread.
Right.
I've developed a real problem lately. But you know what? It's not as bad as other problems. You know, I'm still doing quite a bit of soup.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's working for me.
Good. Yeah.
Instead of sitting there with a bunch of saltines, I found over at the Kroger, nice union shop, this brand, I guess it comes into their deli from somewhere else, and then they bake it on the place and put it in a bag with a sticker on it or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, frozen dough, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Proof it, bake it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a sourdough bread.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, mercy. And Agnes will bring me a bowl of soup with two pieces of that dry toasted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's heaven on earth.
Yeah.
And see, you said, and the reason The reason I caught on to it, because it's Friday night and we can talk about food porn and stuff like that, is that you said, you know, one of those po' boy roles. And that took me to imaginary places, images in my mind,
yeah.
of those gorgeous things coming out of New Orleans and the Gulf Coast all along there, you know, that's got that, that magnificent, crispy, flaky crust that just, you know, crumbles and drops all over the place off of your sandwich and all crispy on the outside and chewy and wonderful on the inside.
It was one of them, yeah, in a white sack.
Oh, it was one of them.
Yeah, it was about...
Honey, that ain't white bread.
It's white flour. That's just a personal choice.
Okay. Because when I think white bread, like I said, I think of that obnoxious stuff that, you know, the they call it Wonder Bread because it's a wonder it'll pass through the digestive tract.
Right. I wonder what's in this. So in the clear cellophane bags with the polka dot band around the middle of it, I just thought that was wonderful. I mean, look at this. It's bread. We'd roll it up in balls and throw it at each other. And then eat the crust. God.
Okay, here, last entry of food porn from Chef David.
Oh, yeah, oh, that guy.
Yeah, one of the much preferred things on grits. This is also the David from Tennessee.
Leave me alone with the grits, you guys.
One of the much preferred things on grits, spoon eggs. Spoon eggs? Yep. A generous amount of butter plopped into a medium-high preheated iron skillet. Once melted, throw in the lightly scrambled eggs. With a table fork, make four trips around the skillet, touching the bottom of the skillet with the white still clear in places. Slide the works onto a bowl of grits, dose with Tabasco, and proceed apace.
Oh, my God.
Lord, yes.
Praise Jesus.
And that really is food porn, because I've got a pretty good idea that while that was a part of his past, that's not a part of David's present.
The
kickoff with several teaspoons of butter or whatever. You know, that's like the beginning of the porn novel that says she pulled the ribbon from her hair and let it slowly fall about her shoulders, because everything else that happens is going to only just get worse.
And the butter melted slowly in the cast iron.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
You guys are really awful. I have to go think about this. We started with, I don't know, have any idea where we're going to go.
No bananas in the grits.
I'm just going to wing it, and we'll just enjoy the feathers, and then he drops in the eggs into the butter.
Oh, my God, wing it and feathers. Well, you're kind of...
Did we come full circle, boys?
No, you took me somewhere else.
I've used up a whole hour. I think.
Yeah, but you're electronically privileged. You're electronically underprivileged. You got to sneak off somewhere and see the YouTube video of Sarah Palin pardoning the Thanksgiving turkey.
I heard Mikey talk about that last night, and I'm not even interested in going there. Because I used to have to butcher chickens, and I ain't interested in looking at nobody butchering turkeys. And I used to raise turkeys, and they're so stupid. But I used to butcher chickens, like 27 at a time.
Mm-hmm.
On Saturday afternoon, I ain't interested in watching nobody killing birds.
Well, it ain't the killing the birds part. I've seen it. I've been part of the process too. It's that utterly clueless woman standing there, not realizing she is being had on camera by saying so, because the reporter maneuvered her in front of what's going on there.
I know, it's so sad. I'm starting to feel sorry for her. She's just so sad.
And then the reporter asks her questions such as, so, are there any social programs in Alaska on the chopping block this year?
Quit it.
But the best part, I've seen commentary all over the web about this, Kate. The best part of it, though, is the part of the video nobody's talking about. It's before you get to the part where the dude with the porn stash is sitting there, you know, doing the turkeys. And she's standing gabbing away in front of it. No, it's the actual part of it's the ceremony part where she's pardoning the bird.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this grizzled guy with a beard holding this big bird in his arms while she pardons it. And he says, Careful, the feet, ma'am, they're dirty. And he's standing there, and he's got, and you know, this is Alaska. This is Wasilla, Alaska, the far frozen north.
My ex-old hometown.
Yes.
Yep.
And here's this turkey farm processor guy who looks like he would be perfectly in place if you just sort of the CGI'd him into an old movie with Gabby Hayes sitting around a campfire.
Mikey said he looked like he was from North Georgia Mountain.
Yeah, yeah, that's one of them. But the beautiful thing of it is that he's standing there and he's got a Bluetooth headpiece in his ear.
Ew.
I kid you not.
That means his brain is getting fried.
And so he's standing there next to her and she's reading the proclamation. And this is absolutely the best part because, you know, I'm very sensitively tuned in to comic moments. I've got a highly developed sense of the absurd. And she's standing there to his left. In other words, as you're looking at him, she's on the right, he's on the left. She's to his left. He's holding the bird, and the bird is just covered with turkey caca. And he's got his Bluetooth in, and she's reading the proclamation and just sort of stumbling through it. I mean, a Thanksgiving Day turkey pardon? Memorize it on the way. For God's sakes. I mean, it's not like you're declaring the Magna Carta to the masses.
So what was so funny?
So she gets to this line about, whereas I, Sarah Palin, governor of the state of Alaska, friend to bird and beast, and she says friend to bird and beast, and she gives the old comic elbow nudge and the yuck, yuck to the turkey farm guy.
Ooh.
You know, does this translate linguistically or is it strictly visual?
It's
You know the elbow dig to the side that.
Yeah. Yeah. Check it out. Hey, watch this shit. Oh.
Friend to bird and beast. Haw, haw, haw. You just turn that thing loose and give me a 12 gauge. I'll blow it right out of the air if it can still fly.
Let me put the peg right in here and I'll just whack it right off on camera.
Yep.
Mm-mm. Ooh, this is an icky way to end my call.
Well, hey. I'm sorry, but it was actually kind of funny. I've obviously failed. After four months of referring to that woman as Caribou Barbie and Mussolini and that stupid segment with the Greta Van Susteren and Matt Lauer and whoever else from the for-profit only media just happened to be driving by Wasilla that day and stopped in to see Sarah making caribou chili for her little clan while dressed in a designer suit.
Y'all been making fun of moose and caribou and all that stuff. These are almost like ethnic slurs. That's like making fun of people eating watermelon. That's what we eat in Alaska, and it's good.
No! Don't mistake me. I love me some elk. I ain't never had no caribou nor moose.
It ain't eggs dropped in hot butter, but do not confuse. The fact that, I mean, this is like, those jokes aren't funny anymore. I mean,
but she came south on this image as if she had come down on her snow, you know, Todd brought me down on the snow machine. And you know, talking about how she was a big hunter and they proudly displayed the photographs of her, you know, holding up the dead animal and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she built this reputation of being, you know, the great white huntress.
And her handlers let her, and then we got to have all kinds of good pornography and comedy and it's just ooky.
And then she finishes off by doing the elbow dig at the guy who runs the turkey farm.
Mm-hmm.
Friend of birds and beasts. Can't beat it.
No, not if you're, not if that's what you need.
I just wish they'd stop following this. You're right. It's pathetic. But you're absolutely right, Kate. It's pathetic.
That's no more funnier than the unpaid mayor on the Delta mispronouncing words that he doesn't, and it's sad that he doesn't even know the difference between perennial guidance and parental guidance when he's talking about our poor education here in in Mississippi. That is so unfunny, but I couldn't stop laughing.
Oh, my God. I just perennial guy. Oh, my God.
He was saying they need the children. It's not the fault of the schools. They're not getting the perennial guidance that they need. And it should be, they should be,
ding, 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 ding. Cause I was thinking it was just this horrific mispronunciation of parental or no.
He was using the wrong word and he didn't even know it because I thought, oh, he slipped. And then he did it throughout the interview several times. They need perennial guidance. And he's talking about how poor the education system is here, and we're on the bottom of the 50. We do have 50 states, right? Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
and he was using the wrong word.
Entirely. He wasn't mispronouncing.
No. That's why...
It's as good as if he had said periodontal guidance.
Yeah, exactly. I was just laughing. I'm just grinning. I'm giggling behind my hand on the way to work. And I'm thinking, oh, God, that fool. You know, and then he sounds like this Delta white guy, you know, cotton farmer. I know I got to get over my bigotry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. You can say cracker on this program.
Well, I'm not even sure. Whatever. Anyway, I'm sorry to all you Southern folks out there. Oh, but this guy just sounded, he was just stereotypical. He was just so stereotypical. Okay. And then to mispronounce, to use the wrong word was just, and it was just, I was just giggling. And I thought, oh God, I got to call. This would be a good kicker. Like, and the longer I waited to call in, like a day or two later, it's just not even funny.
Nah, but it is. Nah, it is. Cause I got a pretty good idea how that Gomer voted.
Well, hell yes. And then to think he's got control over my mind and my body and my, oh, my God, it's funny. You know, I don't oh, boy. He's probably old Baptist or something. I don't know. You know them boys. They're all alike. And the white boys, they all look alike, too. Well, not all of you, but.
I know.
I'm really going to. Thank you for nailing me about. I got to get over my white bread bigotry because I throw those. I toss things around and I don't know when I'm offending somebody's sensibility and their Southern roots and their stuff.
But that was play, Kate.
I know, but it was not just comedy is not all play, you know. I mean, it there was a reason for it. It just brought to mind that I need to.
No, the reason for it was you created a mental image in my mind of bread I can't get round here, just like we ain't got no Popeyes and I can't get no good chicken livers.
And every time I drive by a Popeyes, I think nanny nanny boo boo.
I know you do.
I could call you and say
I know when it's happening.
I'm eating liver for you, Bob.
Yeah, I know when it's happening. The liver raise hit me.
Yeah, right. Okay, just, you know, who could have more fun on a Friday night than this? And if we don't keep sending money, if we don't start sending money, whatever, we're going to lose it. And it's getting real damn close to the edge, and it's just going to take one little episode, unplanned event to push it right over the edge, and it will fall down and go boom, and that will be it. So, y'all, it's up to you. I'm really tired of doing this pitch, but I know you're so piss poor at it, Bob, that I just...
See why I was never any good going into the ministry?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could... Yeah, well, I don't know.
I can do the shtick, but I can't pass the plate.
Oh, God, I'm not even going to go there.
No, the deacons would be standing there going, Brother Bob, shut up. We got to do the offering. But wait, one more idea. No, Brother Bob, shut up. Have them sing or something. Play a song with it. How are we going to pass the plate with you still running your mouth, Brother Bob?
That's how when I'm presenting any kind of, when I'm talking in front of people and I say, I'm going to close and I say, oh, this is my Southern Baptist preacher closing one more time. And in closing, and then I say, oh, and in closing, people's eyes are glazing over. That's my, yeah, you don't close very good. So, except your opening the other night about the snow was delightful. I appreciate that. Thank you.
It just got me in a wonderful place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was good. It was good. And I love it when you, well, I've already said that. I love it when you go out with a monologue at the end and kind of close off without callers. Just kind of fade out. It's nice.
Yeah, it's kind of like this. It's kind of like driving around with an AM signal, and it gets fainter and fainter and fainter. And the next thing you know, there's some televangelist on the same frequency. Send your money now.
KGOD down Rio, Texas.
God, yes.
I'm really. Oh, Texas is W, not K.
No, they're K.
W is Dallas and San Antonio.
Well, okay. Yeah, there are a couple of anomalies, but west of the Mississippi is K and east of the Mississippi is W, with the exception of KDKA Pittsburgh.
And oh, yeah, that's right. And Texas is W. Yeah, I know that because I listen to 1200 every night. Yeah, San Antonio. Okay. I'm out of here. Yeah,
all right.
Good feathers, good livers, good, good eggs.
Hey, and good on you what you're doing tomorrow.
Oh, well, yeah. Eggs in the hot butter, though. I'm going to take that home with me. I'm going home to supper. I want to get home before dark.
I will forward you. I will forward you the email so you can follow it letter by letter.
Oh, you guys are just so nasty. I'm out of here.
All right.
You know, just take care. I just kind of a little miffed because with the grits this morning, there was no damn catfish. Okay? That's, you know, the grits I can, what? There was no damn catfish.
Yeah, but the fact, but Kate, the fact that you think there should be fried catfish with grits at 8 o'clock in the morning means that we're winning.
I've always had catfish at 8 o'clock in the morning. The colder, the better. Oh, God, I'm going to go stop someplace and get it, leave it out in the truck. So I'll have cold catfish in the morning. Ciao for now.
I'll send you the tartar sauce recipe.
Oh, yeah, that one. Take care.
Bye.
You know, keep those cards and letters and that money coming in. Bye.
Thank you, Kate. Good weekend.
Thanks.
Bye.
Too.
That's our pal, Kate. I love our little conversations because you don't know, you know, it's like what used to happen on Sunday afternoons when my dad was off from his shift work. He didn't get a lot of Sundays off. And every now and then he'd just say, let's go for a drive on a Sunday. And you didn't know where you were going to go. But it usually wound up being pretty damn fun. So we'll take a little break and come back. Wow. Friday night is ripping by at a roaring pace. And you're welcome to join in on the Friday evening conversation. I encourage you to. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Tattoo park with an arrow through the middle of a name that looks like Joe. Young girl's looking at her makeup in the mirror, but she still don't ring on her toe. I gotta say 1, 2, 3 more things before I go on. There's a sharp dressed band playing something on the fiddle in the backyard right next door. And everybody's mother's cooking something in the kitchen, that dish is stacked ceiling to floor. I gotta say 1, 2 before I go on. You can't run, try to hide away. Here it comes another day. The red rooster crows a little Mexican tune on the chain link fence by the gate. Somebody's daddy's out there honking on the horn. Hurry up, we're gonna make it late. I gotta see one. Love.
back on my own. I gotta say one, two, three more things before I go on. You can't run, you try to hide away. Here it comes, here comes another day. You can't run, you try to hide away.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Welcome to Seton Notes. I'm Tony Seton. Perhaps I'm an anachronism or just a weirdo, but I loved school. I did well for most of my years, not well but passably at prep school, and college was mostly a Vietnam-era transition stage as I was working full-time at my chosen profession by the spring of my sophomore year. 3 decades after I left college, I learned how to fly. It was the most important experience of my life, and I loved it. I should probably separate the terms school and education because they are all too often not the same thing. Education is from the Latin educare, which means to lead from, as in lead from ignorance, lead from darkness, the darkness of unknowing. Education has been pulled down to dangerous levels in our society. Part of the problem is that the administrators are more about running a system than in turning on that precious light in the eyes of a child that speaks the thrill of discovery. We have many too many managers, many too many regulations. Teachers are also a problem. There's the old saw that people who can do and people who can't teach. Our schools are inundated with teachers who are all about memorizing for tests and passing students to the next grade. Maybe they're reaching for tenure. Maybe they've got it. Teachers are the last people in the world who should be locked into their jobs. We can all remember back to some really great teachers, those who made learning a joy, acquiring knowledge a lifelong purpose. Those are the only kind of people who should be teaching. Similarly, we need to separate the students, those who are going to use their minds, read books, pioneer solutions, from those who will need instruction instead in trades, arts, and crafts. The students should choose, and as Joseph Campbell advised, they should follow their bliss. And that's Seton Notes. For more, go to SETONNOTES.com. I'm Tony Seton.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Hi, diggity. About 5 minutes before the top of the final hour of tonight's program. Just got a note in from News Ninja Gene. Said he ran right out and got himself a Head On Radio Network t-shirt. Very cool. Wear it proudly, Gene. Don't be afraid to say, what are you looking at? You want to know about this? Let me tell you about this. That's how it works. Seriously, thanks, Gene, for picking one up. Now, fun stuff and serious stuff yet to get to this evening. If you want to jump in, you're welcome. I love this thing when I ran across it earlier. Headline, Cheney-inspired bulletproof jackets on sale. Miguel Caballero, a Colombian tailor who has made a fortune from selling bulletproof fashion to presidents, oligarchs, and celebrities, has come out with a new fashion piece. What is being described as a stylish bulletproof jacket. Carolina Fernandez is the marketing director for Miguel Caballero's designs. She said, this is a new market for us. Dick Cheney has helped raise awareness of accidents. Yeah. The vice president of the United States shot a guy in the face. And it's created a market for hunting apparel that's bulletproof. Welcome to America. Something like turkey season, though, spring gobbler season, if you're into that. This could come in handy. I won't go spring gobbler hunting. I will not sit all camouflaged up in the woods making turkey noises, knowing that I'm in the woods with other people who will shoot anything that moves, thinking it's a gobbler. Mm-mm. But apparently this darn thing does work. Rory Carroll wrote about it for The Guardian. And he let himself get shot by a .38 caliber pistol at point-blank range while he wore the jacket. He said the impact of the bullet felt like a light tap. And all because Dick Cheney was just trying to help the economy along by shooting his own friend in the face. You know, these things might just fly off the shelves. Because Dick Cheney's going to be on the loose in a relatively short period of time, just another 59 days and 16 hours. And Dick Cheney will be on the streets, armed and dangerous. I mean, that was his friend he shot in the face. What the hell would he do to you or me? Just astonishing. Okay, on the serious side of things,
just to wrap things up for the evening. And here in West Virginia, there are a lot of people who depend on Medicaid, elderly Americans, children, disabled folk. And in the ongoing sad and sorry saga of what the Bush administration is doing as it tries to steal, you know, stuffing its collective pockets with the White House silverware, China, and anything that isn't nailed down and some that is on the way out. A little something got snuck into the Federal Register today. Or, no, not today. Sorry, my bad. A couple of weeks ago. And it's one of those things that there, and I hope this loophole that was talked about a couple of weeks ago proves true, that Congress, by a simple majority vote with no possibility of filibuster in the Senate, can just overturn this garbage. Because the Bush administration is trying to do every last, you know, they've got an evil checklist. Honest to God, George Bush is has been something like that Mike Myers couldn't get away with if he wrote a character into one of those incredibly delightfully goofy movies that he did, the Austin Powers trilogy. I mean, he wrote a character that had because of an evil accident, had a golden penis. He had a number two named Number Two, and he had the situations in which Dr. Evil couldn't get sharks in a tank with laser beams on their frickin' heads. He wound up with some really mean bass. And it was hilarious. On the other hand, the Bush administration on the way out has an evil checklist. I mentioned one of them the other night. This new rule they're proposing that would allow the skanky old coal-fired power plants to be built right on the verges of national parks. That took a minute while I tried not to swear. National parks. Imagine that. A skanky old, filthy, coal-fired power plant right on the border of Yellowstone. Or maybe Yosemite. Name a national park that means something to you. The New River Gorge National Recreation Area. Or the Gauley. Right here where I live. Rather than talk about a wind farm on the verge, the marches, if you will, of a national recreation area, which would have no impact on it, the Bush administration actually wants to make it easier to destroy those last wild places of this nation. Hey, Luke, down there in East Tennessee. Hey, David, in Middle Tennessee. Hey, David in South Carolina. How would you like to have a brand new coal-fired power plant smack dab on top of the Smokies? Hmm? Yummy, huh? That's what these bastards are doing. And as of this notice in the Federal Register, something else. Something else entirely. Medicaid. The Bush administration proposing regulations that would, in the words of the New York Times, narrow the scope of services that can be provided to poor people under Medicaid's outpatient hospital benefit. Now, the Bush administration, as spoken for by Herb B. Kuhn, the deputy administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, said, "We're not trying to deny services. We want to pay for them more accurately and appropriately. Payments for some services were way higher than they should be." Yes. See, when the Bush administration talks about paying for Medicaid services more accurately and appropriately, there is no more accurate number than zero. Zero literally is absolute. I mean, you can have positive one or negative one, or the square root of stuff, or the sines and tangents and functions and sub this and prime that. You can have all those things, but by God, the most accurate number is zero. And the Bush administration wants to raise the accuracy of Medicaid patients for outpatient services to the most accurate level. And, of course, they're Republicans, so the Bush administration considers the most appropriate payment of Medicaid outpatient services to also be the most accurate one, namely, both of them, zero. New York Times reports the rule narrows the definition of outpatient hospital services to exclude those that could be provided and covered outside a hospital. What? Well, I could go to a witch doctor. I could go to someone who would, oh, look, yeah, faith heal me. But God has never put a limb back on. God has never created a prosthetic limb. But yeah, we could have that. As long as it can be provided on provided and covered outside a hospital. God, that makes me sick. What do the people who actually deal with Medicaid and provide those services say? John W. Bluford II is the president of Truman Medical Centers in Kansas City, Missouri, and he says, "This is a disaster for safety net institutions like ours. The change in the outpatient rule will mean a $5 million hit to us. Medicaid accounts for about 55% of our business." And while I usually decry talking about human suffering in dollar terms, that's all this guy understands. But the first thing he mentions is the fact that they are a safety net institution. They're there when nobody else will treat people. And pulling $5 million out of their budget is a whole bunch of stuff that they can't treat people for, whether it's vision care or dental care for the poor. Well, damn it, poor people's supposed to be toothless. That way they can gum their gruel better and not be dreaming of nothing like steak. Alan D. Avilis is president of the New York City Health and Hospitals Corporation. It's the largest municipal healthcare system in the country. He said, "This new rule forces us to consider reducing some outpatient services like dental and vision care. State and local government cannot pick up these costs. If anything, we expect to see additional cuts at the state level." And then they said, the New York Times sought out a quote from that most unlikely of places, Alabama. The Alabama Medicaid Agency and Carol H. Steckel said that the rule would reduce federal payments for outpatient services at two large children's hospitals in Birmingham and Mobile. Disgusting. But they don't care. Their sole goal at this point in time is to do as much harm as they possibly can to this republic before they go. Yeah, and Lottie in the chat room notes that what's even worse is that Medicare will no longer pay for treatment for hospital-acquired infections. You know, MRSA. It doesn't have to be this difficult. Cover everybody, cover everything. If we can afford what we did for Wall Street, we can afford it for the rest of the country, too. As long as we're playing with phony baloney money, and we're going to get bought up by the rest of the world anyhow, let's at least be bought healthy. Well, that's a grim way of looking at things. You know, we've got a new person coming into the chat room from time to time who is a professed libertarian, and he asked me one evening, he said, why are you all the time busting on George Bush? Well, this is why. This is why. I'm busting on George Bush because George Bush has spent 8 years busting on me and mine and you and yours. I just want to make sure that we can deliver services that can be best delivered by the private sector. Go play with your Game Boy or something for the next 59 days, okay, George? I mean, please? Son of a gun. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Dave.
How you doing?
I'm well.
You didn't take your optimist pill today, I can tell.
No, sadly I didn't.
There'd be a good market for those things. Anyway, you know, you were talking about zeros, and I thought maybe Bush should have been paid more accurately. That's what he'd have got, wouldn't he?
Well, isn't that the truth?
In fact, he probably would have owed people.
Yeah, all those zeros are no dadgum fun unless they've got a real number in front of it.
Yeah, you've got to have an integer in the front there, or else they're kind of useless. But, you know, you were talking about ripping the tops off mountains rather than putting wind farms in place. The thing is, the rich can control coal and oil. They can't control the wind, so they don't want it.
How very, very true.
You know? Straightforward, really.
Yeah, it is.
The way I see the world is that all those characters who think they have the right to have power over others, given they're the last people that should ever be given it, they have to take it. But anyway.
Well, yeah, one of the ironies, Dave, one of the big wind energy companies, and I won't give its name because I don't know this for 100%.
Yeah, so I know you've got to be.
But I was given to believe the other day in a private conversation that humongous wind energy company is what used to be known as Enron Wind. I mean, this can be, if they had spent more time working on wind, Enron, there might still be an Enron.
Yeah, but all these people wouldn't have been able to scam everything off the top. I mean, Enron was only a vehicle for skullduggery, really. That's all it was, in truth. I mean, yeah, it dabbled in a few things, and it messed around with the energy market because that was a good place to make a lot of cash. But the sole function of Enron was cash. It wasn't really energy, I don't think.
No, it was, right.
You know, it was just yet another vehicle for turning a fast, I'd say a fast buck, a fast billion. That's all it was. And it worked quite well for a bit. I mean, the economic system that was set up 30 years ago has worked for 30 years. It's now been shown to not work, and everyone's talking about saving it, but if they save the economy as it is now, they destroy the planet. It's time for a total rethink. And now is an opportunity, if anyone was in power who could see it and could be honest with the people they supposedly represent and say, look, we can't keep going like this. We live on a finite planet, therefore economies cannot grow forever. Simple logic. Nothing complicated that a two-year-old couldn't get their head around there.
Right, sure.
You drew them a nice little picture. So what the hell's going on? You know, that's the big question for me. Well, I think I have the, you know, I keep glimpsing what I think is the answer. And it's not very encouraging when I do. But, you know, everything has to grind to a halt at some point with the way the world works or pretends to work now. It's got to crash. So there's two ways we can go here. We can realize this and say, we're heading for a wall here. We're running flat out. Are we going to slow down before we hit it, or are we going to go headlong? That's the choice. You know, you've got to look up and see what's in front of you, and it doesn't look nice, and you're heading for it really fast. You've got to put the brakes on now.
Nope, hit it and hope.
But given what's happened since the election, with the choices that have been made, you know, I don't know about you. I mean, I kind of got tangled up with the hope thing on the night because everyone was so positive. But God, it's gone away.
Well, and I fear that I may be responsible for some of that, and I don't mean to.
No.
But dadgummit, Dave, I'm a realist. All the way from
my
toenails up.
You're responsible for me feeling that way.
And I still, you know, I still maintain, I still, you know, I'm still watering that little seed that hopes that I start to see change. And I'll, you know, that I see things change for the better in this country. But, well, you know, the incrementalism is a dead letter, and we can't make it better a little bit at a time. This is what you said, Dave. This is stomp on the brakes time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big.
And instead, however, our betters and our masters in this hurtling bus are saying, all the poor people to the front. You'll cushion the blow for us.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no airbags? Oh, well, stand in front of me.
How about some flesh bags?
Mm-hmm. And I think when you look at things like the G20 was a total joke.
It was a gorgeous thing to see them refusing to touch George Bush. I gotta say, it was.
Oh yeah, I mean, who'd want to? You know, I mean, come on, you might catch something nasty. You know, you might catch republicanism or something. So you want to stay clear of that. No, I mean, I just looking at this stuff. I mean, like old good old. Ricardo there being charged in Texas with his prison issue. I mean, the way they're working right now, here's a scenario that just kind of flashed into my head, was that he gets indicted for this, and by some miracle, the pressure is enough that George feels the need to kind of give him a preemptive pardon, because he quite likes preemptive stuff. And then, Dick's okay, so then George resigns, and then Dick Cheney pardons him for anything that he might run into, and they're both covered quite nicely there. Now, wouldn't that be a really neat way of getting out from under at the end?
And I wouldn't put it past him.
And I absolutely wouldn't.
It's a level, and see, I think that's part of what they're trying to feel out right now is, you know, they're really going to come after us. I mean, what do you think? I mean, and they look at this guy who's going to be the attorney general and go, ah, hey, he's one of us. He's Chiquita Brand's lawyer. He's not going to come after us.
Exactly.
And, you know, maybe that's one of those Obama Juan Kenobi Jedi mind tricks. Maybe that's what it is.
I really hope so. You know,
you and me both.
Because if these buggers get away with it, then the door's wide open for anything afterwards. That's the problem.
I mean, I want to get away with this. See, I want to remain consistent here because I'm watching the hypocrisy of the right wing, Dave, and I'm going, you don't know what it's like around here. I sit in another room and do my show prep, and sometimes I do it back here, you know. But I sit there doing this stuff, and I see these right wing nut stories, like the fact that they're all worried about their privacy rights now. Now that Obama's going to come in, never mind the fact that it's been 8 years of the single most profound assault on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights in this country that we have ever seen, ever. But now they're worried about it because that one's going to be the president.
Well, no, because it might be turned around on them. They might have to suffer with everybody else.
And see that you can go
to. They've got more secrets to hide.
Oh, shoot, yeah. I mean, they got a whole bunch of them upstanding right wing, God fearing pig lickings got some big old log closets.
Old and lots of skeletons rattling in.
Yeah, but there's two ways you can go on this. On the one hand, you can say, you know what, I hope he takes every one of those powers that George Bush demanded and just busts their ass with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that sort of the rough frontier justice approach.
That's just from the gut, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and it's yummy to contemplate.
Oh, yeah.
You know, round them up, march them off. Hey, Glenn Beck, you're going to look good in orange. That guy, yeah, oh, yeah, it would be. But I also recognize that that's an affront to my idea of what the Constitution really means.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that I can't be a hypocrite like these right-wingers. Dave, I have to be consistent or there's no point in me being here.
That's what I was saying to you the other night, that decent people have a line. And that's yours. I have mine. But these buggers don't have a line.
And yeah, and so my line is that I want to see Barack Obama voluntarily roll back and destroy all of the constitutional abuses that George Bush committed.
Well, that'd be a great slap in the face now, wouldn't it?
Because I'm gonna assuming that we're still able to be on the air, I am gonna have an apoplectic fit the first time I read a news story that says that Barack Obama has appended a signing statement to a piece of legislation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm going to
throw a complete wobbler, as they say in England.
Yeah, absolutely. Just whoops, you know, get him. There he goes.
Activate the bugger now before it gets bad.
Yeah. Somebody get the blowgun and the Thorazine darts.
Oh God!
But I have to because I can't be somebody 3 hours a day and somebody else 21.
No.
And I can't be somebody for 8 years and all of a sudden turn around and everything that this administration does is going to be sunshine and daisies. Because it ain't.
You gotta be a realist.
I think so. So you know, I'm just trying to hang on, you know, benefit of the doubt. I'm all for the benefit of the doubt.
Absolutely.
But, you know,
becomes the benefit.
Right. And crap like what's been done to habeas corpus?
Mm-hmm.
Got to go. Gitmo got to close.
Yep.
Torture, you know, and I don't want any of these weasel words. You know, George Bush stood there and said, hey, well, we don't torture. And then we find out that we waterboard. Well, that's not torture.
No, the Spanish Inquisition did it, and I think most of the things that they did, they quite openly classified as torture. They didn't give a stuff.
Yeah.
That's what they called it.
Yeah, I don't want this legal quibbling about whether or not somebody captured on a battlefield deserves or is entitled to humane treatment under the Geneva Conventions.
No question.
Because we don't engage, especially, what is it, General Article 3? I can't remember now. But whatever, we are signatories to that. We didn't sign that because we feel all warm and fuzzy about the other side. Or because
happening to yours,
we don't want it done to ours.
Yeah. And you open everything at that point. And this is where these guys, you just have to think, did they have their brains removed at birth?
No, but they didn't. They're just that damn mean. They don't care about ours.
Well, I was going to say, they don't care about either side. They don't give a stuff. I mean, they're all for the cash that's made by General Electric and the like, and Blackwater and Carlyle Group, et cetera, et cetera. That's what turns their crank. And if it costs a few thousand Americans, well, they were only poor, uneducated yobbos anyway. What the hell, who cares? They were worthless.
Yeah, I mean, from the
damage, they're worthless, and they get no backup, and they're treated really badly.
Yeah, did I hear somebody that it can take literally a matter of multiple years? The current backlog for veterans' disability claims in this country is a matter of years.
Yeah,
in the decision process.
Well, my dad waited 40 years for a Navy pension for a disability that he got in World War II. So, you know.
Lord.
It's nothing new.
No, but it's
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just
And that's what I was going to say. I'm not one of those who ascribes ancientness as being an indication of correctness.
No. I'm just saying the injustice has been there for a long time.
Yeah, and we've got a chance to start fixing it.
Exactly. Can't fix any of them too soon. You know I absolutely believe that if, rather than money driving everything, doing what needed to be done drove everything. Can you imagine a place?
I can try.
You can try. It's really hard with all this crap that's beaten into your head every day. But, you know, could you imagine if somebody went to the hospital and said, I'm sick, and they said, what can we do for you? Let's get you fixed up. Okay, great. You're all done now. Thanks. Have a good day. See ya. That's how it should be. But, no, you can't do that. But if you want, let's think, if you've scammed the world to the tune of a few $100 billion and you're suddenly short of cash, well, then there's plenty of cash for you. But if you're sick and poor, we're a bit short now. We just gave it all to the bank. They didn't really need it. They were using private planes to fly themselves here, there, and everywhere. But you're sick. You really need it, but sorry, can't have it.
Yeah.
What kind of a world's that?
I know. Start adding up the numbers and all those damn zeros, the trillions and the billions, and just, you know, work up that column like some sort of sickened version of one of those routines from a Ma and Pa Kettle movie or an Abbott and Costello film. Add up all those numbers for all the evil that we've done, and then let one of these functionaries tell me that they want to start trimming the fat on the back of sick people.
Exactly. And education will be the other one that will take a big hit. Because the rich don't want you to be educated. They want you just to know enough to press the right buttons and slide the right piece of paper across the desk. That's all they care about, so you can be exploited. They don't want you to think. They don't want you to be a critical thinker who sees that you're being burned every day. They just want you to comply and pass that paper and press that button.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you, citizen. Move along now. Nothing to see here.
Yeah.
These are not the droids you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, I mean, I've chosen a path in life that a lot of people think is kind of strange. Like, I don't have a television. I live in a really small apartment. I don't own anything I don't need. I try and consume as little as I can, et cetera, et cetera. I live close to where I work. I can walk it in 20 minutes, which I do sometimes in summer. I'll cycle it in 10, and I can drive it in 5. That's all conscious decisions. And the world, again, would be an interesting place if a lot more of that was happening. Because that's part of the European thing, though. I mean, I'm used to living close to where I worked from being in England, where, you know, there isn't that big spread out and sprawl.
Oh, I know.
Out here. So maybe that's where that comes from. I'm used to working that way.
And frankly, I love my life out here in the country. But as I've noted before, it's 12 miles round trip to the nearest grocery store over a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of services, and there's very little for the kids.
Probably lots for the kids. Because when I grew up in England, I had miles of countryside that my kids don't have. And I really valued that, and I try and get them out there to enjoy.
We do some of that. We do try to take advantage of some of the natural beauty that's around here. But in terms of the things that they can do that will keep them here as adults.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you mean like gainful employment, et cetera.
Yeah, forget it.
Unless they want to blow up the tops off mountains, that'd be awesome.
Or work at Walmart. Welcome to Walmart. You know, you have no idea. I have nightmares, Dave, of what happens with this operation if everything dries up and blows away, because that's where I wind up. Welcome to Walmart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's few options in some places. I realize that.
Well, there's few, and there's decidedly fewer options if you are like me, and you insist on making, you insist that one's employment choices have to meet with a certain de minimis standard of ethics.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a 45-year-old guy, but I'm sure that there is something inside a coal company for which I could be valuable.
Closing the doors?
That would be, I'd take that job in a minute. But no, you know, computer stuff or hell, secretarial.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm fortunate. I used to be a sign painter. That was kind of, I went to university and did all that stuff, did chemistry and astronomy, and at the end of it, I thought, what the hell are you doing? And I always loved art and stuff when I was a kid. And I always felt like I'd been pushed away from that and jammed into science. So when I'd done, I thought, I'm just going to, you know, bum around for a year or so and see what happens. And I just started painting signs on the side kind of thing, a few here and there. That was how I ended up being a sign painter, you know. Now I do, you know, 3D modeling and animation and Photoshop and illustration and all that good stuff. And I love my job.
And you can feel good about what you're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I do for there's a guy that I know quite well who's been fighting a bank for 10 years regarding a predatory loan, blah, 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 blah. I can't go into detail, but I've been kind of helping this guy. I did a website for him and all kinds of stuff. And I try and use what I have in little ways that I can, like that, to help people.
Sure.
You know, because they're just small things that I can do, and I just try and do what I can when I can do it. So, yeah, I you know, in terms of what I do for a living, I've got it made. I work in a company where everybody's kind of fairly cool about everything. You can have a joke with anybody. You know, it's fairly flexible. If I need time for the kids, it's great. And I, like I say, 4-minute drive, can't beat that.
No.
You know? And so my life's simple, but great. But, you know, I've gotten living in a fairly affluent part of the world, you know, close to Toronto, so, which is totally different from where you are, I realize.
A little bit.
So I have
Although we got, you know, 4 or 5 inches of snow on the ground, so.
Well.
It ain't like we're warmer.
No, you're not warm. Well, we got a little bit, but you couldn't say that. But just to our south, they got, was it 76 centimeters? What's that, 2.5 feet?
Ouch.
This morning?
See, that's always been the only anti-Canadian bigot, the only Canadian bigotry that I maintained. Too damn cold.
Oh, it is.
Nicest people on the face of the planet. Beautiful land. Gorgeous culture. Too damn cold.
Yeah, you got it. When you wake up in the morning and the alarm goes on and they're saying, no, frostbite warning this morning, it kind of makes you want to stay in bed, you know. And you drive out and you feel like you're on wooden tires because they're really cold. But, you know, the summers are nice.
Yeah. Yeah. If entirely too short.
Well, yeah. They do say over here there are 2 seasons, winter and construction.
Yeah. Or what they say in Vermont, 9 months of winter and 2 months of bad sledding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, no, I get that. But, you know, the
but like
just,
in England, they say if you don't like the weather, just wait a minute, it'll change.
Sure. And, you know, it just drives me nuts because I do sit here and talk to so many people from so many different places, and I want to see it all. I do.
My goal in life is to know everything before I die. I know I won't do it.
Well, yeah, and I realize that the rest of the world may not share my, and there are places where people are very, very mean, and people don't share my feeling. But I feel like a citizen of, I feel like a citizen of the planet, because I'm.
It's only, 120 years since you couldn't just go wherever you felt like. Not that long, really, is it?
Given,
you know,
constraints of time and distance, but, yeah.
Yeah, but there was no, you know, well, let's search your bags before you get on this galleon, please, you know. Or,
yeah, you want to sign on to go rape a 28,000-year-old culture? Come on!
Yeah. Better get your eyeballs scanned first, please.
Now, what's that, Senor Cortez? You flunked out of law school, and now you want to destroy a civilization? You look like our man. Come on, we're going to Cuba.
But even the common guy, in Europe, the channel's 22 miles wide. So it was kind of a thing for people who had the option.
God, and Palin's an English name, isn't it?
Sorry?
Palin's an English name, or Scottish or Irish.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see France from my house. It must have come from Dover.
I was in the chat room. I'm probably still logged on in the chat room. I just haven't been typing very much while I've been talking to you. But I just typed in earlier, you know, Penguin's too stupid to know she's stupid.
Yeah, she is. And if you haven't, have you seen the video?
I've not seen that one, no. I listened to the Canadian guys, and I was just cringing. For her, it was painful for her.
The best take on it, and I would read it on the air, but it's sort of, there are no real language regulations here, but I don't want to run off people with kids in the room or anything like that. But the best take on that I've read so far, and the guy's brilliant all the way around. I giggle at him constantly because he writes funny and he writes true, and it's rudepundit.blogspot.com. The Rude Pundit.
I'll have to check that one.
Oh, you must, and especially his take on Mussolini's trip to the Turkey abattoir is not to be missed.
I won't miss it then.
Oh yeah, because this guy is coarse, and beautifully so.
Well, some things kind of require it almost. It's like I say to my kids, you know, that swear words, they hear more of that at school than they'll hear for the rest of their lives, probably.
True.
And I've always said to them, you know, I have an issue if you use it as a filler word, but if you're really angry about something and you come out with one, I'll let you have that, where it's appropriate to the situation.
Yeah. The thing that I've hung on to is what Kurt Vonnegut said about it. And I think it was in Jailbird, where he said, his character says, I don't use these words because if I use them, that gives someone an excuse not to listen to me.
Yeah. Yes.
And so while I'm not sitting here passing out any great the wisdom of the ages or anything, and I do let fly with the one now and then when it just sort of...
Well, it's required.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And there are times when it's required.
But, you know, your people are much better and more creative about it than we are. and our regard for continental swearing goes way back, and I'm proud to be in saying that in company with somebody like Mark Twain, who remarked in A Tramp Abroad, in his brilliant chapter, The Awful German Language. He said, I met a lovely German dowager at the opera last night, and she said, oh, there are so many things in which the Germans and the Americans are so similar. For instance, we say verdammt, and you say goddamn. And I guess it reads funnier than it speaks, but there's a great deal more creativity involved. I mean, I can't imagine some guy in Arkansas hitting his thumb with a hammer and saying, bugger!
Well, that's a common one, you know, I mean, like,
bloody! That's so deliciously rank and sacrilegious and all of that's because it's just a short form of blood of Christ. Wow!
It was the blood of Our Lady, I think, is where the origin of that one.
Well, okay, sure, that makes
but
sense.
But it's still reasonably sacrilegious, I guess. Oh, yeah. And I love the Quebec swear words are all about the chalice and stuff.
Oh, really?
And the tabernacle. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
they're that kind of swear words up there in Quebec. And they're all about bits of the church, really. You know, it's kind of all religious stuff.
Je ne sais pas le vernacle de Québec.
Well, if you speak French fluently like a native and you go to Quebec, your French is useless to you.
Well, yeah, okay, that's much like
dropping you down in, you know, Glasgow or somewhere and say, okay, find your way home from there. Ask that guy.
I can't find the bathroom. What are you talking about? Yeah, or trying to speak Parisian French some back bayou of Louisiana. Yeah,
well,
sure.
Yeah, it's the same deal in Quebec. It's so different from French.
Exactly. Hey, Dave, I got to run along. You've lit the lights up.
Okay, have a good one.
And a great weekend to you, my friend.
Yep, you too. Relax as much as you can, and we'll talk again.
Yeah, and send me some of those first-class Quebecois swear words.
Okay.
All right, later.
Have a good one.
Bye now.
Bye.
It's always, you know, it's always good to be able to do that in another language. I mean, we're learning that firsthand with our kids who are going up through middle school, which is where swearing really flourishes. And I promised my son I'd teach him a couple of good ones in, you know, like simple German, simple French, and maybe he could get away with it because it's forever being used around him. And who said that? Ferg said that. Did not. Did too. Yeah, that kind of parenthood. It's a beautiful thing. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks. I heard you mention Canada, and it is a beautiful land in so many ways. Vancouver's actually pretty mild, or more mild than I thought it was going.
Very much true, very true. Again, that's part of my Canadian ignorance. I think Canada ends, somewhere north of Chicago and Lake Michigan.
Well, generally speaking, you're very right, though. I mean, it can be bitterly, bitterly cold. I guess Montreal has a river that freezes up through most of the winter, and people ice skate it to get to work at times and get back home.
Yeah, but it's also at least until the climate started going literally south, they had all those cool stuff up there, like those ice boats that I'm fascinated with that I've mentioned a couple of times.
Yeah,
boats on ice skate runners with sails that go 120 miles an hour or something.
And I actually also wanted to mention a mining issue that they're dealing with right now. And I read this from a Canadian feminist magazine called Horizons. And it says the Council of Canadians has joined with environmental, First Nations, and social justice organizations to stop the Harper government's plan to allow mining companies to use Canadian freshwater lakes as dumping grounds for toxic mine waste.
Ooh!
Yeah. Although it is illegal under the Federal Fisheries Act to dump toxic material into fish habitated waters, mining companies have been given a loophole under the government, and they are now able to reclassify lakes and other freshwater bodies as, quote, tailing impoundment areas.
Oh, God, they've been going to school at the George Bush EPA School of Pollution.
There you go. There you go.
We didn't change the law. We didn't change the law. We just clarified today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is them putting their foot on the pedal to that wall that David was speaking about. You know, are we going to let up on this, or are we just going to, this endless destruction? You know, I guess Milton Friedman, though, their big economic theorist, would say, you know, no free lunch all the time. And if people can fish out of the lakes, then they can get free lunches and dinners, and they want us dependent upon their 7-Elevens and Burger Kings and, you know, corporate dependency. They're always talking about government dependency and what a bad thing it is, but they're doing everything they can to make us corporate dependents, corporate feudalism. And to do that, they have to destroy the commons and our commonwealth. And disaster capitalism at its most profitable. But we'll see. We'll see what the Council of Canadians can do. It's a remarkable organization. It's very much like Public Citizen here and headed by a person named Maud Barlow, a really remarkable lady. And what else? Did you happen to catch an article this week on Common Dreams called Hobbes is Dead and I Feel Fine?
No, that's one. I will go looking for it, though. That sounds,
Well, it kind of speaks to that.
Yeah, because the last Hobbes I had any response for was a stuffed tiger that was drawn by Bill Watterson.
That's right, Calvin and Hobbes, wonderful, wonderful series, cartoon for sure. But the Hobbes part of that equation, for your listeners who aren't familiar with him, is Thomas Hobbes.
Yes.
And he's basically the philosopher that sees human nature very negatively, and the elite and the right-wing militarists love him because he's kind of their intellectual cover for their pathological behavior.
Well, and Hobbes and Locke were part and parcel of the philosophy behind the organization of the fledgling United States, were they not?
Yeah, yeah. And a couple sentences from that article on Hobbes is dead. The guy writes, Hobbes famously asserted that the natural disposition of humankind was aggression, brutality, and a war of all against all. He argued that the creation of a modern state was necessary in order to bind us under a social contract, to impose by coercion the rule of law, and in essence to protect us from ourselves. Hobbes is primarily motivated by fear in his moral and political philosophizing. Fear of the other, fear of nature, fear of death, fear of losing his property and privilege, even fear of his creator.
Dear God, right-wing talk radio is straight out of Hobbes.
There you go. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And a lot of these TV dramas we see, the 24 type stuff.
Sure.
And anyway, so this article, the guy contrasts that approach to the world to more hopeful visions that are out there. He talks about Obama, not as the end-all, be-all, but, you know, just some a different spirit. And very interesting piece, and I think so necessary, too, because I think even a lot of progressives at some level, maybe subconsciously, have absorbed that kind of negative view of us. We all have gotten very cynical and despairing at the madness we see around us and the way we're disappointed at times by our species and even ourselves. But the other part of the story, that's the radical part, to tell the other half of the story that so often doesn't get told. And that is, there's a book about it called The Brighter Side. The Brighter Side of Human Nature by Alfie Cohn, who's a progressive educator, theorist, philosopher.
I recognize that name.
Doing great stuff regarding how we raise our kids, how we kind of get them to be hyper-competitive.
Well, Lord, look at the best example of that to come along in a little bit. This horrific video that went up on YouTube and struck a chord with a lot of people of the United States Special Forces father egging a pair of two-year-olds on to beat on each other.
Mm.
The shorthand for it's been referred to as the baby cockfight.
Oh, God.
It's absolutely sickening. And what's worse is that the reportage on that story led to the discovery that there's like this little subculture of clips on YouTube of children beating on each other at the connivance of a parent or parents.
Mm.
And there you have exactly what you just mentioned, Preston.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's tragic for sure. Yeah, violence has become entertainment in so many ways and a paycheck, careers for so many others. It's tragedy. But again, there are a lot of efforts to push back on this mindset that gets planted in our brains at times. There's an organization called the Media Education Foundation, and it produces videos about about this imagery we get inundated with. And most recently, I saw a movie they did called Consuming Kids. And again, the kind of pushing of violence. You know, this is why I love those guys on the Travel Channel who go around the world and do these wonderful foods. And, Bourdain and Andrew Zimmern.
Yeah.
You know, if you accept Hobbes' view of the world, you wouldn't want to go travel around the world unarmed like these guys are, and you'd be surprised if you made it back alive. That's not the real world at all. They're always lecturing us about, hey, you're not being realistic. You're not talking about the real world.
Right, and yet, you know, I had a call from our buddy Mike in Woodstock, New York the other night, and he was telling us about the hostel that he has started in Panama.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
And you know, if that's the case, you know, if Hobbs is right, as you observe, then why would you do something like that?
Right. Which isn't to say terrible things don't happen.
Sure they do.
Certainly. But generally speaking, you know, it's, you know, you see Bourdain and Zimmern and so many other people, every chance they get, they travel the world, and their experiences are generally people welcoming them into their
home. Yeah, and it's not because Americans tip well.
Right, right.
It's not, you know, we don't, we, if it was driven by the way Americans are, we would be turned, after, especially after the last 8 years, we'd be turned away at every border.
You know, there's, I think in some contexts, there can be that. I'd even concede that at times in some circumstances. But so many other times, it's not. In fact, I had experiences where I tried to tip like a Mexican cab driver. He wouldn't take my money. They've got some kind of code, basically, where they just work on their salary. They think that tips may be a corrupting influence or something. I don't know what the theory behind it all is, but he wouldn't take my money. And I ran into that again and again. People who, you know, knew I was lost and got me on the bus, rode the bus with me to make sure I got to where I need to be. Again, I tried to give the person money, wouldn't take it. It's because of their own generosity of spirit that so many people do this. And, you know, Adam Smith, again, a figure that the right wing has co-opted to try to cloak themselves in
the
intellectual veneer. But they totally misread intentionally what Adam Smith was about. He only mentioned an invisible hand one time, and there's a whole complex discussion about what he's actually saying regarding it. But he did a whole other separate book he was much more proud of, aside from Wealth of Nations, which was called Theory of Moral Sentiment, where he argues about people's innate decency.
Okay, the ball points out. Theory of Moral Sentiment.
Yeah, you could you know, punch in on Amazon or wherever. It'll come up in a product description. Very interesting, very telling. And great reviews of it, too, from some of the people who have read it, you know, just regular customers. It depends on which issue of Theory of Moral Sentiment that you find, you know, which edition, but I'm sure you'll find a good one. But anyway, it actually, David Corton and people like that have cited the Theory of Moral Sentiment in their own work about how we could construct an economy that was not an earth destroyer, not a soul destroyer, not a killer of people and babies in Iraq and, you know, poisoning our own families here. Anything's possible with the Creator, with the Lord, they'd say. And so we'll see. We'll see. But again, I think refusing to let go of the notion that there is more to us than what these right-wing psychopaths try to convince us of, and all these preachers preaching their own version of this fear and our own, you know, alleged depravity. There are other stories, much better stories, that we can live by.
Yeah, there are. And we have to think about these things, Preston, right now, because of the fact that we're facing one of those rare opportunities to fix what's wrong. And we are up, I mean, we are up to our eyebrows in fear, fear-mongering, terror. I mean, what they did to us with Iraq, not you and me, we saw through the BS, and so did everybody else listening to this network. But what was done with Iraq got done with the bailout.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got to do it tomorrow. Got to do it tomorrow. Well, the Wall Street will come. Godzilla and Mothra will be right in the middle of Wall Street, and all the buildings will fall down. Got to do it tomorrow.
Yeah. Yep.
And now the same thing. Well, you know, no one knows if Detroit can make it past January.
Right, right.
And isn't it a little bit convenient that we don't know if Detroit can make it to January 20th? Am I the only one that's suspicious of this?
I saw an article that suggested something like GM should rebuild the mass transit it destroyed or something like that. You know, the ways we could retool these these corrupt organizations, you know, make them serve human needs instead of just, you know, some profit motive.
I know.
The auto industrial complex, that's going to be a big one to tackle, and we'll see. I guess San Francisco's planning on becoming the first electric car city or something like that. So,
yeah, get out there first, embarrass the rest of the nation, and then let Bill O'Reilly get out there and tell us about those six San Francisco values.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, and we're running out of time, but what I mentioned a couple of minutes ago with regard to the Hobbs and talk radio, something else that I observed, and maybe others have as well, and I'm just proud of myself for having come up with it on my own when it's already been out there, but right-wing ideas do not flourish in groups. Now, while they'll go to their CPAC conventions and things like that and sit there and say right-wing buzzwords to themselves and, you know, go hire a hooker when it's all over, the basic mode of conveyance is an isolated mode.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, Rush Limbaugh sits nearly alone in a studio. Oh, dear, I'm sitting alone in a studio. But no.
Up on a wall. Sits on a wall like Humpty Dumpty.
Yeah, but he's talking to people. And that's the difference between something that goes over the computer like this, over the Internet, and something that goes over terrestrial radio. You know, come on, kids, everybody gather around. The oxymoron's coming on. And the family listens and talks and interact. No. You listen in your car when you're all alone, and you have no defense against that swill.
Mm-hmm. And he's got the king's horses and the king's men protecting him. And
you're darn right. Meanwhile, you know, what we're trying to do here and what you see happening with other enterprises as well, you know, that's why we go for this whole interactive thing, whether it's the interactivity that the folks at Brave New Films provide for Cenk Uygur, or whether it's what we do here with message boards and chat rooms and blogging at the same time the shows are going on, or what goes on with the Nova M shows with Randy and Malloy. It's an attempt to get a group discussion going on so that we alienate the alienation.
Yeah, you said it, and build community. I have to, and I know his show runs at the same time as yours, but I have to make a shout out to Jeff Farias as well.
Oh, sure.
He's also doing really critical work. Overcoming the alienation, the isolation, you know, the sort of thing that's created in sprawl, for example. I mean, there's a whole political economy of sprawl. You know, I think rural life and urban life both can be very, you know, helpful and useful. But that in-between corporate constructed sprawl has been really so problematic. And again, something else, where there is a movement afoot, you know, movies like Escape from Suburbia and this movement of new urbanism, really interesting stuff going on, a lot more consciousness about, you know, the water we're swimming in and the costs of it, for sure. And before I let you go, I know you've got to run, I heard a beautiful, beautiful song this evening, something called Hero Song by Brendan James. And it's on the soundtrack of that documentary called Body of War.
Yes.
Okay. Which also includes people like Tom Waits and a lot of remarkable artists.
Brendan James?
Yeah. And his track is the beginning track of that soundtrack. If you get a chance to check it out, it's a remarkable song about, again, rejecting that. The potentially ugly side of human nature and remembering our better selves. And
I will do everything I can to find that, because I take your recommendations very, very seriously. Preston, we do have to roll out. We're at that moment. But I wish you a wonderful weekend, and I thank you for everything that you bring to the table. I will never think about Hobbs in the same light again.
Great, and I'll definitely be checking out The Rude Pundit.
Yeah. Don't go in there thinking. I mean, a lot of great ideas, but man, it's spicy.
Okay, I understand. But anyway, thanks.
Take care, Preston.
We'll talk soon.
Bye.
Bye.
I hate to do this. I sincerely hate to do this. I got five other lines blinking here, and I hate to run over, not because I don't want to talk, carry on the conversation, but because it makes getting the podcast and the archive, it makes more work for Ben Birch when I do that. So I will just humbly apologize and wish you all a very good weekend. Thank you for everything that you have made this week be. Hope you got a little giggle tonight, and I hope you'll be back with us on Monday. Same Bob time, same Bob channel, as it were. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Peter Godbold. Thanks to Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. And RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
We'll do it live! Howdy!
All righty! Hey, it's a beautiful Friday evening where I am. I hope it's as beautiful wherever you are. Welcome to the 3 hours of live programming that the Horn offers on Fridays. I'm the only member of this cast crazy enough to stay at work on Friday, because I love it. And we got plenty of places to go this evening. Lots of fun to be had. Some of the lunacy that's out there. Yes, there are pole-dancing Mormons. Pole-dancing Mormons. And they want to make it an Olympic sport. I kid you not. It's a little too visual to run. The audio is not as much as the video is. But you got to trust me on this one. There are pole-dancing Mormons out there who indeed have a petition circulating to make pole dancing an Olympic sport. No, really. They're proud to announce that they already have 300 signatures from around the world on their petition to make pole dancing an Olympic sport. For the sake of perspective, as it was noted in the blog post where I observed this, by comparison, Nuke the Moon has 288 signatures worldwide.